Good morning, everybody. This is Jay. We're just going to take a few minutes here to let people dial in, get settled, get your coffee, get your cinnamon bun.
Okay. Who has the last four phone number digits of 6919?
That's me.
Who's me?
Margaret.
Margaret.
McCusker.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Margaret.
I live on Elizabeth Drive.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I just need a name to go with the phone number.
We just try to put in our minutes all those that have attended the meeting.
Okay.
Hi, who just joined?
Hi, this is Ian. I just called in.
Hello. Oh,
hey, Ian. How you doing?
Good.
Okay. What are you?
What's your last four digits of your phone number?
5346. Yeah, take a second there. Sorry.
I don't have them.
Yeah.
There we go. Okay. Who has the last four digits of 3742?
That would be Nick Borelli.
Hi, Nick.
Oh, hi, Nick.
Good. How are you, Donna?
Good. All right. Well, I can carry him first just to get it over and done with. Okay.
Just give it a few more minutes here.
This is Gloria Aspinall, 8091. I'm on the line.
Yeah, we have you listed, Gloria. Good morning, honey.
We got
okay.
Your number, Gloria.
Yeah.
Oh.
We know where you live.
Okay.
I wrapped you. Hi, Mike.
How are you, Donna?
Good, and you?
Hey, Mike.
Good, thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Okay, who has the last digits of 8939, please? Hello? Oh, they left. Okay, fine.
Oh, get them away.
All right, chase them away. So that's... Okay. World.
All right, I'm going to call the meeting to order at 9:06. And we have Kathy on, right? Kathy,
yep.
You're on?
Yep,
I'm here.
Okay.
I didn't want to interrupt.
Okay, thank you. So I'll ask for a motion to have a. I'll make a motion to approve the agenda. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Any discussion? Any adds? Any deletes?
Nope. We've got a lot of stuff on here.
Yeah, I know. I did want to add. There's a camper down at the Hutwell parking lot. No plates on it. No registration. So I want to just quickly bring that up so we can divert that issue to the proper authorities. So I'll add that under administration.
Jay, was that the same one that was there last year?
No, it just is a different
one.
Yeah.
Okay.
We thought you traded yours in, Kathy.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll just slip that into the agenda real quick because I don't want to have to wait a week, and I'm sure that Donna's going to have to be fielding phone calls as to. Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
So all in favor of the agenda, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay. I just want to, if Kathy, you don't mind, I want to pull Nick Borelli up front. Nick has called in this morning. He has a driveway application in with
mm-hmm.
us. And
okay.
He owns the lot across the street from his current property, and he wants to build an outbuilding, or I guess what Nick describes as a barn. It's going to be a pretty sizable garage. And Nick, I'm going to let you go ahead and take the microphone, if you don't mind.
Okay. All I want to do is move the existing driveway, basically.
Okay.
Okay.
So, yeah. And so I took a look at your, Kathy, have you seen his driveway application yet?
Yes.
Okay. So, there's a cutout on that property, right at the boundary line with that, I think that's the name of that rental property, the old chalet.
It's called the Getaway Chalet, yep.
Yeah, Getaway, yeah, Getaway Chalet. And so you want to abandon that because technically, I know you're saying on your drawing it's an existing driveway, but in our records we don't have anything on record.
Okay, but when I came here and I bought up here in 87, that was existing. The Morris family used it for a driveway, especially with their... in the wintertime, because that top drive was impossible.
Right.
Okay. And as far as I'm concerned, it's a driveway. When I purchased the property, it was there. The people prior to me were using it when the Morris family still owned the property. Then when I purchased it, I decided that I would use it because I need the area sometimes. But I also told my neighbors, including Kathy, who has parked there, that they could use it when I wasn't. So, and if you look in the dictionary, basically any driveway is nothing more than coming off a private, of a public road to a private road. And so it's been there and everybody uses it. And
right.
It's gravel,
so
there's a swale.
Yep.
It's not affecting anything, and all I'm going to do is actually make a better one down further down.
Okay. So are you theoretically abandoning that little cutout, the existing
yes.
one?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So then we would look at this as if you were, I'll call it rerouting your
mm-hmm.
driveway.
Okay.
And
okay.
Let me pull up the driveway ordinance real quick. Oh, you got it. Okay.
Can't find any.
Okay, under Section 6, application fees. This is to cover the cost of professional monitoring inspection for changes to an existing driveway. A permit fee of $75 shall be submitted with the application. So that's what you've done.
Yes.
And what I'm looking at is for new driveways, for new construction, addition of a second driveway or rerouting of an existing driveway, a permit fee of $200 shall be submitted with the application. So I would consider this a... Well, either a new driveway or a rerouting because you're moving the existing one. You're abandoning the existing and then creating a new one.
But basically, if I give you $200, that will take care of it.
Yeah. Then it goes on to talk about a bond. Now, you're not building a dwelling. Is that correct?
Correct. That's correct.
Okay.
It will not be, no, absolutely no way will it be a dwelling.
Okay. So I know that, Kelly, have you been up to the site? I believe
yes,
you have.
Yes, I
okay.
have.
So let me just, I'm going to go back to next drawing real quick. Nick, I'm going to buy you some crayons if that's all right.
Yeah, okay. Listen, when I need to really draw well, I can.
I know, I know.
Okay, you know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so... That's at 40 feet. So your new driveway cut, your curb cut, if you want to call it a curb cut, is in compliance because it's more than 15 feet from the boundary line. And you got an 18-foot wide mouth to your driveway.
Correct.
Is that, you know, you can go 21 feet, Nick.
Well, if I can, I will, to be honest with you, but I don't want to encroach more than I have to.
Okay. Because I know
actually,
what you're planning on parking in there.
I'm trying to set it
yeah.
up across the middle of the driveway to make it easy access.
Okay. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Gotcha. Much more than that.
Yep. Okay. All right. So I'm going to ask Kelly some questions in regards to his site visit and you pretty much think that this isn't okay because it's a pretty flat lot. It's a negative grade from the road. Any other concerns or comments?
No, it's pretty straightforward. It's downhill. It's not going to affect our road. It might affect your driveway down the road, Nick, but you know that.
I do, and I told you I would do the best I can to, you know, I'm going to throw some riprap in there to try to make everything work better.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I have no problem. It's not going to affect the road no matter what you're doing there.
So, Nick, are you asking for a waiver from the compliance to getting a performance bond?
Yes.
Okay. Now, so that's why I'm going to go back to Kelly. So you don't see any ramifications down the road, down the driveway?
No.
Just going in?
No, I have no problem. I don't think a bond, you know, I've seen bonds done in the past, and they're extreme for extreme circumstances. This I don't think this would fit.
Okay. All right. So I'll make a motion that with this application, and I'm going to read off the lot number. Tax map 4, lot 71, that at the request of the applicant, we waive the performance bond requirement.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have seconded. Kathy, any further discussion?
No. Jay, you asked a question about whether or not there was going to be a residence built on that lot. Does that affect, considered in the ordinance at all? Or were you just asking a general question?
No, I was asking a general question because the way the ordinance is written, it says dwelling. And I believe a dwelling is classified as a residence. Or,
living.
That would give the ability for Nick to get a certificate of occupancy, but he won't be doing so if it's an outbuilding or a garage.
But I just didn't want to set a precedent that unless there was something in the ordinance that was validating us waiving the surety bond.
Right. And in this ordinance, it always states here we go. The Board of Commissioners may waive strict compliance with a standard or procedure set forth in this regulation if they find that the purpose of this regulation can be met without requiring strict compliance. And so that's what we're doing. Yep.
Okay.
I just wanted to make sure everybody knew that.
Make sure.
Okay. So we have a second to the motion to waive the performance bond.
Yep.
All in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. And
motion passed.
The motion passes. So, Nick, you don't have a date of application down here. Do you want us to fill that in for you?
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. And make that today?
Sure.
Because the application will be good for 1 year, but if you need to extend it, of course, you can do so in writing to the Board of Commissioners next year.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
So just tell me.
We're going to give you your other check back, Nick.
All right. And I make a check out for $200, is it?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. You all set, Nick?
I am. So I'll just, later on, after the meeting's over, I believe I'll try to run down and give that to Donna, okay?
Yep. Okay. That'll be great.
All right. Thank you very much, everybody. Have a good day.
All right. Thank you, Nick.
Have a good day.
Okay. We have, for those new on the phone, we're going through what we call administration on the agenda, and we have a weekly visit now from Chris Albert, our water system engineer. Chris is going to give us a status update on how things are going up at the site. And so, Chris, you got the microphone.
Thank you. Everyone hear me all right?
Here.
Again, Chris Albert from Jones & Beach Engineers. Project's moving forward very well. They're kind of ahead of schedule. The 4-inch HDB line on Briston Stock is all the way up to the Ryan Ike intersection. And they're going to keep going down Briston Stock, where it transitions over to Aspen. The amount of ledge they've hit so far is pretty minor, just a few boulders that they've had to kind of break apart as far as a payment item. They finished the blasting and the ledge prep at the tank site. I'm actually meeting representatives from DN Tanks this morning. They just arrived up there. We're going to sign off on the tank subgrade today. DN Tanks still not mobilizing till the June 29th time frame. They're still kind of finishing up other projects. And then they finally found a superintendent that will actually be running the project with the shuffle that they have. They're working on the piping on the booster pump station and working their way up vertically on the construction of the building. So if anything, we're moving forward ahead of schedule, which is nice. So take any questions from the board or the residents.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. I sent you an email last night.
Yep.
And one of the things that we saw last week was the very first invoice.
Right.
Distribution of payment.
Right, from both DN Tanks and Dawson.
Yeah. Here it is. And so one of the things that we talked about last week at our commissioners meeting was that, and based on this invoice, was that the site work was 100%, but we were still talking about doing blasting later.
Right, which is a separate payment item. So everything was done as far as the pad site. The only thing that was, they had is that little knob of ledge that they had to blast.
Okay.
And then for the building, for the actual water pit. So again, we try to look at a pay rec, a 30-day period. But when you look at, like I said, it ends June 1st, but it's now June 11th. By the time we get it processed with the state, we're 45 days out.
Right.
So, we try to look forward of what they're actually working on at that moment to capture that. Because otherwise, the next payment item wouldn't even be till the end of July now.
Right.
So if you were out of that, if you put now he's out 3 months. So when you think about, the work he's done today, he wouldn't even get paid till August.
Right. But do we have that check in? We don't have that check in the manifest, do we?
No, because that would be totally...
No, that's got to get signed and processed with the state.
Oh, this reimbursement, requested disbursement first?
Yeah, you send that to the state.
Oh.
That has to get signed by June 15th.
Okay.
It's sent to the state for Rick Skorenka to process.
I thought we had to pay the contractors first. And
No. We wait. They have to get paid within 45 days.
Okay.
So that's why, they don't... If you read the specification contracts...
Right.
They need to get paid within 45 days of me signing it.
Yeah, okay.
So what usually a lot of the clients, you only get 25% match.
Right.
But a lot of the clients are, say, 100%, if it's a true SRF. So they actually don't have hundreds of thousands of dollars either.
Right.
So usually that's why we want to get this stuff processed. And so we kind of run ahead a little bit. So by the time you sign it, it goes to Rick Skorenka at DES. It goes through the government.
Mm-hmm.
They cut a track, goes back to your routing number. It's almost 30 days, and that's
okay.
why...
So is that form then to be signed?
Yes. Yeah, that has
okay.
to be signed, and that with the backup documents, those two, DN Tank and Dawson's, have to be emailed over to Rick Skorenka.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, and that starts, and that has to be, that was that deadline of June 15th.
Right.
So that has to get done by Monday, because, now from June 15th to July 15th, the state shut down as far as any payments.
Yeah, because of the audit.
Mm-hmm. So we won't even be doing another disbursement till the end of July, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we try to look forward, kind of favorable to the contract, because now he's 2 months out because of this audit they have. So we won't be submitting one July 1st.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, as far as the blasting goes,
So what we did is, for the blasting, we were up there about 2 weeks ago with their. So I have actually a little grid piece of paper that we actually did gridded the site, the ledge, the high ledge on the winding track and the building shaft, and then for the actual building, we looked at pinning the ledge for the building.
Right.
But it was cheaper to the guy, because again, it's a change order. He wanted $8,000 to pin the ledge, where it wasn't $8,000 to blast 4 or 5 yards of ledge.
So
we said, forget it, let's just go back to the original plan. So they blasted for the building and the pipe trench, and then they hammered for the winding track, and then they drilled for the winding track.
Yeah, and
they
then
didn't
hammer.
Blast.
Yeah,
and then hammered. Because it's pretty hard ledge, but we didn't want any fractures.
Right.
So we've got a nice, solid tank ledge pad for the tank to sit on.
So
why is blasting a change order?
No, ledge blasting is a payment item. Yep.
Oh, hi, Larry.
Blasting is a payment item.
Yep.
There's no blasting in the contract.
Yep. We went over that with the geotech engineers, and we allowed it.
Okay, so but it's not a change order?
No. Blasting is a payment item for the project. So if you read the specifications, we had 55 yards. It doesn't matter if it's blasted ledge or hammered ledge. It's ledge moved by mechanical means.
Right.
Definition.
Oh, so you're just paying for the ledge removed under the payment.
So that's not an extra cost, right?
Well, no, it's a payment item in the contract specs. We had 200 yards of ledge.
Yeah, 200.
No, I get it. Yeah.
Oh, so it's part of that?
Yeah.
Oh,
So if you read the specifications, I estimated by the four ledge probes that SW Cole had done 2 years ago, I had estimated 55 yards. Now, I didn't even look at the winding track. Due to what DN Tank needs for a vertical winding track
to
run the low, that's why we looked at raising the whole site, but then that was going to cost more money.
Yeah.
So the winding track had to be lowered for their mechanical means of getting a low around to put the wire winding.
Yeah.
So that, and then the amount of extra ledge they hit by the pipe shaft and the building.
Right.
So again, it reads in there, it's 55 yards of ledge. Any additional ledge would be paid for by that payment item.
Okay.
So it's not.
Yeah.
So okay. I kind of give it a rough target, but again, ledge is such an unpredictable number.
Sure.
I'd rather pay for what they do than to guesstimate.
Yeah.
I get it.
No, okay.
I get it. You just overran the quantity. That's fine. That's
right.
Enough.
Yeah.
But you know, he's getting paid for what he's doing. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool.
Okay. And then the other thing I know was on the booster pump station itself, and you had responded back that
the shop drawings and pipe.
Yeah.
I mean, it's moving, like you said. By the time you get that signed and over to the state,
right,
we're gonna be past. By the time he gets paid, he's gonna be like 75% done.
Yeah.
So,
no, I'm just doing my diligence because
that's fine. That's why we're all here together.
Yeah, we get some very interested. Residents in the district, some of them are on the phone, and that is a good thing. That is a very good thing. And so if somebody asks me, are we paying extra for the blasting or not, and I read the specs again last night and this morning, and like Larry, we just weren't sure.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
you've explained it to us very
clearly. A lot of the nitpicky aspects are in X section 1050, measurement quantities.
Right.
So I estimated 75 cubic yards of number 67 stone under the pad.
Yeah.
And then I had 55 yards of ledge.
Right.
And it said in there, if it goes over that, then you're going to use this payment item. So there's a method for payment.
Okay.
The other thing, too,
that's
as far as...
works.
Yep.
I'm fine.
The gate valves that you had questioned, those are all in on along Birkenstock and then Salins.
Right.
And now getting all the way up to Young Fry.
Yeah.
And then... the other
Aspen?
No, the other side road that they passed.
Biasca?
Biasca.
Yeah.
So there's valves all for that whole stretch.
Mm-hmm.
The yard hydrant is not in, but it's at the laydown. He was missing a 90.
Oh, okay.
So, but if you go up to the tank site, you'll see all the red hydrants
there.
So he has to put it in.
Okay.
So,
perfect. All right. Let me just
ask him for one hydrant, anyhow.
Yeah.
Right.
It's physically. He missed the 90. The hydrants are at the laydown yard up at the tank site. He just when they got delivered, they forgot to give a 90 for it.
Right. Okay.
So that'll get put in the next couple of days.
And
that's again. So what that does is that gets rid of the bleeders. You know, any type. You know, Ian can chime in, but any dead end run that we have, we always want to have a good means and methods for blow off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, A for sediment, any type of cleaning or anything like that.
There was a question I had as far as inspection and observation on site. I noticed when I was up there one day when they were laying the 4-inch main on Bristenstock, I wasn't confident that it was being laid in sand. The base for the sand and then covered with sand and then bring the fill back on top of it. So my question is, who is the person who's going to make sure that all this is being complied with, being on a site? And I know you're only here two days a week.
I mean, it's means and methods. I mean, they have sand, so I mean,
right.
I guess I'd have to, because again, they put sand down. I mean, I was there with you, Jay,
right,
last week.
Kelly.
I mean, they were putting sand under the pipe.
Right.
So, I mean, it's you'd have to stand there the whole time to physically watch them put.
Exactly,
sand
the whole length.
And, yeah.
Yeah, it's a
full
time
job. Typically,
down.
They got to prep a couple hundred feet, let's say.
Yeah.
Then they'll come through with a loader, put the sand in, then they lay the pipe in. And,
yeah.
I mean, it behooves them to do it right because if it breaks, they own it.
Exactly.
So, I mean, and again, everything still gets pressure tested.
Yeah.
And chlorinated, and it goes through all those means and methods.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I did talk to them about the rocks.
Yeah.
They just needed to get by. Some of those rocks they actually have to hammer, so they have to come back down.
Right, and break
them
up.
Actually pull them out. So all the rocks that are on the sides are all going to get pulled back in and removed. So it's not they're not going to be future lawn ornaments.
Right.
And again, you know, like, and again, also people have to, you know, remember, this project, the way this project works is once the project is substantially complete, you know, say September, October, or whatever, at that substantial completion, there's a 1-year warranty for the project where we hold 2% of retainage.
Right.
So, you know, out of the 670,000, you're going to be holding that 10% or 2% retainage for a year.
Right.
Plus punch list items. So, again, we've got them for 12 months after we've been done.
Right. And I noticed there was a performance bond as part of the contract, too.
Yeah, we've got insurance certificates, payment bond, insurance bonds.
Yep.
And I have Holly from my office still have to send you the two balance spec books.
Yes, I haven't received those.
Yeah, I went through my emails, and I think I forgot to forward it to her.
Mm-hmm.
And, Jay, we've been going in. This is Ian, the operator. We've been going in about an hour or two a day. Just, I mean, obviously, we don't want to be there the entire day because 80% of it is digging and then 20% of it is laying the pipe. So we've been trying to pop in the morning or afternoon, whatever makes the most sense, and checking in on this. And I can tell you so far, I mean, we haven't seen, you know, when we pop in, we check the depth of the ditch, you know, stuff they've already laid without us there, and we haven't had any issues with that. So everything's looked good, but we've gone there at least, you know, every day to check and pop in on it. About an hour or two of, being with them in different scenarios. So it's just, I don't know exactly what time we'll be there during the day, sometimes in the afternoon, sometimes at night, but, you know, sometimes in the morning, but, we've been keeping an eye on it and just the nature of the way they're doing it with the HDPE, you're not going to have, you know, they're backfilling as they go. So you're not going to see a sand bed across the entire ditch because a lot of the times it spill piles in the way and everything else. So they're adding sand as they're installing the pipe.
Right. Okay. I know that.
Jay, this is Mike Smith.
Go ahead, Mike.
I got a couple of questions. The engineer didn't answer the question. Who's overseeing the inspections? He's only there two times a month. I mean, he skipped around that.
No, he's there two times a week.
He just stated it. Ian's coming up doing periodic inspections, and then I'm coming up doing weekly inspections. Again, it was never intended to have a full-time person on any job sites anymore. Really, it's means and methods that they're doing the job right. Again, if they're doing something wrong and the pipe breaks, they own it. So, I mean, it's nobody's trying to cut corners as far as putting sand bedding. They've got, I don't know how many truckloads of sand that they've been using all the way up through the site. So.
No, I've seen the sand stockpiled, and I've seen the loader bring it up to the pit or the trench.
Yeah.
So I've seen the sand dropped in, but you know, it's the consistency. Are they doing it every single lay that they put in?
Yeah.
And so Ian has just answered my question.
So I guess my question is, who's doing the install? Is Dawson doing it or is Ian doing it?
I'm not doing it.
Okay, so. It's always been, we've always had Ian inspect the install from the other subcontractors throughout the years. Is that what's
right,
going
you know,
on here, or is it not?
I am inspecting, Mike. The difference here is that they have a month-long project, and the cost on the district would be kind of counterintuitive to have us there 10 hours a day. So we are doing periodic checks. That's essentially what Chris and I agreed to. He's doing the weekly, like he said, and I'm coming in and out kind of unannounced to check the condition of everything to make sure, you know, like I said, that we're seeing what we want to see, and these aren't scheduled visits with the contractor. We're just coming through, checking, making sure everything's, you know, the way we expect it to be. And I can tell you so far we've had no issues. And I know that, like I said, you know, Jay's concerned about sand. or whoever's concerned about the sand. It's just a different means of laying pipe. You're not bedding and then dropping a 20-foot stick down. You're literally, you know, it's going down kind of angled as they're putting it in. So it's getting dragged into the ditch. But so there is not a full-time inspection on this project.
So I guess I was in big time construction, and I know when the cat's away, you know, what can go on. And I understand about retainage. I understand about the year's warranty. I don't buy that. You shouldn't have that problem up front. If there's a break in that line, obviously the contractor has to repair it. But that should be prevented by right up front doing it right. And I hate to say it, but, you know, if nobody's really inspecting it, you can't guarantee that's being done right.
It is being inspected. I understand what you're saying, Mike, because, I mean, I think we all have that concern with any contractor. But, you know, like I said, it's counterintuitive with a project of this length to have somebody on site, you know, it would have been a $25,000 plus Chris's whatever their inspection fee is. Now, you'd have $60,000 into inspection on it. All said and done, and the way that that pipe gets laid, there's no pipe going in the ditch for two-thirds of the day. So we're coming in, trying to do it morning and night to make sure, morning and towards the afternoon to make sure we're checking in on it, and it's the best way we can do it without having an absolute idle body there for the entirety of the day. And any check that we've done up to this point, everything has been done, you know, and again, these aren't things where they know where I'm showing up at 10 and make sure everything's all good. We might not show up till noon. We might show up at 8 a.m., 4 p.m. So they have no idea what time we're coming in, and it's the best, you know, hybrid method we can come up with to reduce costs while also trying, you know, make sure that we're seeing what we expect to see in the construction method. So
there's a simple solution to that, what you just explained. The solution being having the pipe be laid, like, from 2 o'clock on, let them dig the deck trench in the morning, get it all set, and then somebody's there to inspect it from 2 o'clock on, or whatever time you set up that they install the pipe, so that somebody's got eyes on it outside of the people installing it.
Which is essentially what has been happening. We've had somebody there almost every afternoon, so and then morning checking. But, I mean, at points in different – you see where they've been digging up through the road, you know, obviously along Bristenstock. You've got some pretty major slope there and everything. I mean, there's times they're going to backfill as they're going. It's, you know, I don't have a concern with what we've been seeing. You know, I guess this would be for the commissioners to decide if they want us to put a body there 100% of the time and eat that cost. But, you know, that's the only other alternative. And because we can't really get in the way of the contractor and tell them you can only backfill pipe from, you know, 1 o'clock on or from 2 o'clock on, because you're going to end up with a pile of change orders because of, or an additional cost due to, you know, slowing them down.
Yep. I disagree with you on that last aspect.
Yeah.
That's all coordination is what that is.
That's something,
But yeah,
it's just not feasible in the environment that they're working in on that hill to be able to open up 400 feet of trench and backfill 400 feet of trench, or 300 or whatever they're getting in certain days. You know, all at once. They have to have equipment. They've got, you know, two very large excavators, the backhoe, and small excavators, all having to move up and around that same job site area. So they really can't open up and then also backfill that. Some days it works like that, some days it doesn't.
But that's the way that, unfortunately, I know you're concerned, Mike, but that's the way that the contract was written. And I know that Kathy and I had very little involvement in reviewing that prior to its release, but that's what it is. That's what we're dealing with. I know in other projects, Mike, you're familiar with them. We had a clerk of the works on site that we hired for a few hours a day. That was just never a consideration on this project, and unfortunately, it was really not brought to the attention of the commissioners. So, unfortunately, that's the way it is. But that's what we're dealing with.
Who's talking
but,
now?
You know, this is Jay. I feel confident if he ends up there every day, which he said he is, You know, if there is a water main break down the road, he's the guy that's got to fix it. So I'm sure he doesn't want to have to do that. So I'm confident that Ian is making sure that things are being done correctly. May not be to the. Go ahead, Dinah.
Pictures of what he's seeing, just so we would have it documented. That might be helpful.
Yep. I know Dawson is taking a lot of pictures.
Yeah, they're taking pictures. So
we also have job site photos and are keeping a field book on anything that we're seeing when we're there.
Good.
The only thing we haven't been monitoring, because it's just not possible with them hauling it off, and I don't know, Chris can maybe answer this. They've been, you know, as far as the ledge removal. That's the only thing that we haven't really been monitoring at all as far as what we're seeing for ledge removal.
Yeah, at this point, it's just payment, rock payment items. Anything bigger than a cubic yard rock that's pulled out. I think he's got like 4 yards of rock that he's put out.
Yeah, so
and
very
did
little
they hit
so
some,
far.
Did they hit some ledge up near that intersection with Reinach and Bristenstock?
He said he was down about 3 feet. He had to
just
the rest.
Yeah.
And that's where we're expecting to see ledge towards the top of the mountain, obviously, when we're getting towards that Reinach-Bristenstock intersection, both sides of that. That's where we were expecting the worst ledge to be, so kind of playing out that way.
Okay. All right. Go ahead, Larry.
Question? Yeah, I'm just wondering, have they talked about any change orders?
Nope, no change orders.
No change orders yet.
Excellent. Good.
That's what Larry does for a living.
Change orders?
On a $2 billion project.
That's a full-time job.
Yeah. But we'll be asking Larry for his assistance. Does anybody else have any other questions or concerns for Chris?
Hi, this is Dinah.
Go ahead.
Could we go back to the paperwork again for just a second?
Yep.
This 4-page document that we got from Chris, I can see where the signature for one of the commissioners is and so forth. Now, we're gonna email this to Rick Skorinka's area. However, we're not going to disperse any payments to Dawson, DN Tank, or the retainage accounts.
Yeah, that's what I thought we would be doing, right?
Well, you're gonna be getting in. I mean, you have 45 days to pay them.
Oh, okay.
So again, if you want to pay them out of your own pocket and get your 24% back, that's up to you. I mean, most projects, you know, that are fully funded through SRF or groundwater trust, most, you know, associations don't have $1 million laying around. So they have to use that payment requisition to actually physically pay the contractor.
I think the way it was explained to us.
We had to pay it first.
Yeah,
and then
maybe by Adam is that we would have to pay it all first, and then we get a check that then goes back into that account, that 24% reimbursement. That's how it was explained to us.
Okay. I mean, you can do it
We
that
can
way.
Do it that way, yeah.
Right, but that the key really, that's got to get, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's got to get even. But whether you pay Dawson's and DN Tanks now out of that other account, that's up to you guys, I guess.
Okay.
I mean, we have, by contract, you have 45 days to pay that.
Okay.
From the day I sign it. So,
Again,
that gives you time to shuffle monies around and accounts and all that. So, again, I'm just telling you, but per contract, how you have all that extra money, again, that's your discretion. Now, all I'm saying is by contract, it has to be paid within 45 days of my signature.
Mm-hmm.
If not, because I've had some that have been delayed because of processing at the state.
Yes.
And it's been, say, 50 days.
Mm-hmm.
So by contract, those 5 days, you have to actually pay them interest.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, you signed this on June 3rd, so you're saying we have 45 days from that date?
For them to be paid, correct, by contract.
Yep.
Okay. You'll have to excuse us. We haven't done any grants and all that stuff, so it's all sort of new to us.
Yep.
My other question is, does DES have our correct account number to put this money into?
I wouldn't know that. I mean, that's something you would have set up.
Okay, who is that, Dinah?
DES.
The routing number. So you gave them a routing number when you did
right.
your final.
That was the original one. So now we probably
have
to
give
do
the new
with,
one?
With the new one.
Yeah.
So,
who is that contact at DES we would give that to?
Well, Rich Skorenka and then...
what was her name?
Yeah, the other girl from Groundwater Trust.
Yeah.
I can get you her.
All right.
Aaron Holmes.
Yeah. I was just going to say, all right. I'll shoot an email.
In addition to Rick Skorenka, it would go into the correct account, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Whatever you guys gave them when you did your final loan documents.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got the money and then we had to transfer it into the new account. So
right.
I don't believe they.
Project.
Yeah.
Another question is this document serve for the invoices?
You mean, is it the invoice from the two contractors? I don't
Correct.
Believe it is.
Are we
this,
going
this
to
four
get
page,
like that?
That's just for DES, right?
No, that is. The other two pages are...
Oh, it is?
Yeah, those are the payment requisitions. Yeah. That's the backup material that DES requires that you
oh.
have. So those
oh.
are monthly disbursements.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. I thought they'd be a lot more sophisticated than that. Okay.
No, it follows the AIA
yeah.
contract document. You know, percent complete this month, previous month.
You go to borrow $200,000 to buy a house, and you got 50 pages you got to sign.
This is pretty standard format, man.
Yep. Okay.
So yeah, it's a typical AIA format. The front page,
yeah.
And then the second pages are usually your backup of all your payment items, what's been paid, what's you know previous payment, what's percent left.
But
okay.
if we're not going to get a build for. Putting in the pipe, that type of thing. You have done
yeah.
that already.
That is the bill.
Yeah. This four-page document that you've seen, that is the bill with the amounts to the right-hand side.
So the Dawson invoices you, and then you put it on the spreadsheet for us to pay.
They do all that. That is right from them.
Who's they?
Dawson's Excavation and DN Tank.
Okay, but we don't have any data for that. We just have this document.
That is
the data.
What do you mean data?
Percent complete.
This is Mary McCusker. I think that Dina should have an actual bill that she has to pay. I think what she's asking is she has nothing in hand that nobody can see, and I can understand her concerns.
No, we have a four-page document.
There's two page invoices from each contract.
Yep. The contract is contract pieces, the sections of the
contract
are listed, and the percentages of completion, and then the dollar amount to that percentage.
Okay. If you're a company, okay, and you're performing a service, okay, and I can understand why Dean's concerned, but when you perform a service, okay, when someone's paying the bill, you want a bill. And everything should be, you know, itemized and stuff. You know, I can understand her concerns about this, but is there any way your company can send to Dina, this is what I'm paying? Not a contract,
yeah.
though.
Yeah,
those are
AIA
yeah.
documents.
Those are them right
those
here.
Those
AIA is the Architectural Institute of America.
Oh.
Correct.
Yeah. What does AIA stand for?
The Architectural Institute of America. They produce standard contract language documents and forms for construction projects.
Okay. Well, like I said, we've never worked this way before, and I guess we are going to be going by this four-page document and the further ones we'll get. That's our only invoice, and... as far as I can see, Dawson didn't sign off on his page. There's no sign off from Dawson. And
the key is that the engineer signed off.
Yeah.
The key is that the engineer
signed off. That's true, they didn't.
Yeah, Kathy, go ahead.
Okay, so just a clarification. I know Dinah and I went through this document yesterday. I can put this document on the website, and basically there's a summary page of the amount of money that we're expected to pay, which is almost like $283,000, we're getting back $66,000 from the grant. So it's not like the scenario that Chris described where the municipality is relying entirely upon reimbursement to pay for the bills. So there's a little bit of a difference there. There's two pages of the four pages. One page is a detailed description of what the DN tank bill is, which is $23,300. And the other page is a detailed description of the Dawson bill. And that's what Jay went through questioning a couple of those items. So I can put all four of those documents on the website. It's one document, all four pages of that document, so that if anybody wants to review that, it will be there for them. And you're right. All the invoices are put into a standard template so that there's consistency.
Good. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
So if Donna can email me that document, I can do it as soon as the meeting is over.
Sure.
All right.
That would be great.
It's hard to explain how this is set up without seeing it.
I know. That's why last week it was sort of Greek to me. On the second page where Dawson is, amount recommended for payment, which is the $230,000, which is minus the retainage, that has been crossed off, and you have the whole amount there, total completed of $255,000. So I'm wondering about that.
Because we went over this last week. We're requesting the full $255,000 from DES as far as the 24% grant.
Right.
You're going to give Dawson what they want, but then you're going to hold the rest of that retainage. So whenever we ask money from the government, we ask all of it. The government doesn't do retainage on their own. They don't have a way for interest. So we're asking $255,000 is the project. We're asking the $66,000 would change, but then you're going to get the $66,000, but you're only going to pay Dawson the $230,000, holding the $25,555 in the retainage. But typically, we always ask the full amount because typically I've never done, I haven't done a lot of them that have been 24%. Usually it's 100%. So I always grab everything from the state. So when the project's complete, all the state money's out, and you, the district, are actually holding the retainage.
Okay. On the DN tank page, you included the amount minus the retainage. So
yeah, I mean, we'll catch up to that on the next one. But yeah, I would just grab the $20,000. I think I missed the $3,000 that they held off.
So you mean we're going to carry this over to the next four pages?
I'll get it cleaned up when I get the next one. Again, I've been doing this for 30 years, so it's kind of routine.
Well,
I manage million-dollar projects like Larry all the time.
30 years of cleanup should hold for something, but you'll have to excuse Idlewise because we've never dealt like this before, and it does seem non-transparent in my mind. But I guess we have to go with it because that's what we're given. So the bottom line on this piece of paper is a commissioner should sign the first page, and we should get that to Rick Skorinka, along with our new account number for reimbursement.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
And, going forward, Dawson should certify their pay rec.
Yeah. Again, really, it's the engineer's signature that's key. But yeah, I understand.
Yeah. No. They. I'm not casting aspersions on anyone, but there's the False Claims Act, and they need to certify their app, even though we know it's good.
Well, you always get caught by the details, don't you, Larry?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I got a question.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
What percentage complete is that project as of that invoice that you're paying?
So there's several pieces to the contract. Each one is identified individually. Which piece are you looking at?
So you multiply them all together, and that gives you a percentage complete. And that should match the amount of money you're paying out versus your total contract so that you're not overpaying.
253, it's almost half, 40-plus percent.
Less retainage, too.
But yeah, I mean, total complete, I don't know, do the math.
It's
yeah,
just
totally.
Math.
It's 255 out of 670, so it's less than half.
It's got a 1.249.
What is it?
I think on the first page it shows that the total percent of the loan and grant disbursed, so it's 22.5%. So we've completed, we'll be paying for 22.5% of the project.
Yep.
Therefore, we're getting 22.5% of the 295 grant.
That's not the question. The question is, okay, so if you're paying 22.5%, that project should be at 22.5%.
No, it's at 45%.
Well, no, the total
is 45%.
No, the whole project 1.249, 1,249,000.
Well, with contingency.
No,
so remember
to Mike's
with
question,
the contingency,
Mike,
right?
Mike, they're billing for $255,000 out of the total contract value. That's 45% of the contract. They're saying 45% complete.
And what, Larry? I didn't catch the tail end of that.
They're asking for 45% of the lump sum.
And the job is not at 45%.
No, but they overran some of the quantities, so that kicks it up a bit.
Yeah,
it's up to the commissioners, but I don't believe it's at 45%, even close to it.
All right, Kathy's going to go ahead and put these documents up on the web as soon as she can.
Wait a minute, Jay. You don't change. I got a question here.
Yeah.
You guys are paying excess money, and you're not at the percentage complete you should be paying that money. It all comes together down the, you know, it all works out. If they're billing for 45% and they're only at 20%, you guys are in the hole for 25%.
But the project is $1,249,000, so we are not at 45% of that. That's the total project.
Yeah. For this particular contract, well, I would say that's one of the reasons why they should certify their pay rate.
That's correct.
Also, our engineer has reviewed it and agrees with the quantities. So,
yeah, so I'm looking at
it. Well, the engineer shouldn't be, you know, the engineer is working on behalf of Village District. It doesn't sound like he is right now.
Mike, the total, Mike, I'm looking at the document, and I'll read it right off to you. The total percent complete of all the aspects of the contract, A1 through A11, is 38 point, and it's sort of scratched out here, but 38.04%.
There you go.
It's just a poor printout I got.
And then we got the copy.
The last line.
And then the one. Yeah, and we're 6%, and we're at 6% for DN tanks, 5.99.
Right.
Oh, there we go.
So if you add those two,
if you add them together, that's 44%. You're paying 45%. Is that correct?
Well, 44 point. There's a fraction to that. And I think the 45, did somebody just round that up? So what's the point, Mike?
The point is the percentage complete is what you should be paying. And
right.
That should be going every time you make a payment, it should be equal to the percentage complete of that project. Simple.
Right, but we haven't made any payments, Mike.
I understand that, but you're about ready to make the first payment. And the first payment is 45%, so the percentage complete should be equal to 45%. That was my question.
Okay. So, I agree with that 100%. But, no pun intended.
The building, everything's moving ahead of schedule.
But as Chris just explained, we have 45 days in which to pay the contractors. So we can fine-tune these numbers if they have to be and get the
numbers won't be fine-tuned, but the explanation of what what it's paying for. Dinah and I talked about this, was it yesterday, Dinah, or the day before, that we'll kind of have our own little spreadsheet going to make sure that we understand and can convey where we are with this project.
Chris, wasn't
That's
there a...
But it's only as good as the data you put in.
Right. No, right. But at least we can do a spreadsheet so that the numbers all total and we get the right percentage, because you're talking apples to oranges here. You know, your DN Tank is 3%, Dawson is 35%, so when it's not that easy to roll it all back up into.
Wasn't there a conversation to some degree over the fact that they were overdoing it because there won't be a pay rec in July?
So there's no pay rec in July, but actually everything that they have is done as of now.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the ledge, we threw the ledge in. The ledge was completed, you know, this week. So, again, we go from month to month, but, again, it's a moving target as far as what's in. So they're actually above and beyond what's there now. So they've reached those goals.
And exceeded them.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of pipe they have in is more than what we're paying them for. I mean, they've got, again, they're not going to get paid till almost August on the next one. And then so, you know, they're going to be way short. I mean, the project by August is going to be near completion.
Yeah, and if we cut this check with Dinah in the next 2 weeks, they'll be far beyond 45% complete.
Yeah.
At the moment we cut the check.
He's actually fearing that he's going to be out of work soon.
Yeah.
I mean, he's...
Well, yeah, it's possible.
I mean, they're
moving pretty fast.
Yeah, they're moving, you know, 200 to 300 feet of pipe a day.
Yeah. Okay. I want to move this along because we're already an hour into poor Chris. He's got to get up to the site. Yeah. Anybody else have any other questions or comments for Chris? He's got to go meet with DNN Tank up at the site.
I have no
idea. Okay, here. Say it again. Was that Larry?
No, I don't have any questions.
Okay. All right. Well,
Can I ask a question to you?
Yes. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I think it's kind of. I think I hear Dean's concerns and I hear my concerns. And you have all these spreadsheets and contracts and stuff, but I think the village would feel better if they could see, you know, what everything's spent on. You know, if they could have the invoices and see what the expenses are and what everything's going out to. I think that would, you know, give a lot of people more comfort to see what is going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Kathy said she's going to post the disbursements, and we're actually sending up a hard copy. I mean, I can forward you the email also to post. Specification books are so large that they can't be in a PDF form because they can't be emailed, but we have a link to a cloud, and I can forward that to you guys so you can read the spec book too. We're actually mailing the district a hard copy, but we can give you the link that you guys can post on the website for that email.
Oh, good.
I'm not concerned about the money that's being spent. I'm just concerned about that everybody in the district has about what line items are there. And that I think that it would go a long way to, you know, soothe everybody's feathers that if they know what line items are being spent on each thing. Mm-hmm. And if Kathy wants to do that, that'd be great.
Yeah,
I think that'd be a really good thing.
When you see the Dawson's bill, there's probably, Jay, correct me if I'm wrong, was it, a dozen line items of each individual piece of the project, and what
A1,
percentage
A1
of that?
A1 through
A11. Okay,
A1
so 11, 11 line items. Yep. Okay, yep, so that will be up there by noontime.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right.
Okay,
thank you, Chris.
We're going to let Chris go because he's got a meeting with DNN Tank up at the site.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, 4 pages.
Anything else you got for us, Chris?
5? What am I missing?
Is that yours or is that ours?
Yeah, that's mine.
All right.
Could you just have Jake Dawson call the sheriff's department again and just remind him if there is a road closure up there today?
Yeah, I don't think there is.
Okay.
I think they're working more on the tank site. So.
Yeah, I noticed the sheriff didn't get any calls this week about closures. So.
Yep. And I'll figure out next week whether I'm coming on Thursday or during the week. It's, you know,
right,
whatever works. But we still get to have a 9 o'clock, you know, weekly meeting with you guys.
Yeah.
Whether or not I'm here or by phone.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Chris.
Yep.
All right. Now I'm going to hand it over to Kelly Robitel is here. He's our DPW foreman for those who are... Go ahead, Dinah.
Is Ian still on the line?
I am. Thank you, Donna. I was just about to ask if you guys needed anything more from me before I pop off.
Sorry, Ian.
This seems very minor compared to what we've been talking about.
Sure.
However, you have completed the water hookup on Interlaken, the Kondrat property.
Yep.
Has that bill been sent in yet?
It has not.
Okay. We need to pay the village back for that, so I'm hoping we can itemize that a little bit so I can figure it out. That's all.
Explain that a little further, Dinah. Differently than I typically bill these, or what are you asking for exactly?
How much did it cost to hook up that Kondrat property?
As
long as it's itemized on the bill.
I haven't been paid yet either, Dinah, because I haven't billed. So there's no one's out any money on this except for myself.
What I'm asking
so.
Is that the itemization be clear so I can refund that money to the village.
We do that every time we send a bill, Dinah.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay, and Ian? Ian?
Yep.
This is Kathy.
Hi, Kathy.
There was some question about how you doing. So in the last year and 4 months or so, we've had, I think, three water hookups? And
sure.
Just to make sure we have those index cards and the triangulation points and a photograph to add to that binder that we've been collecting for all the water curb stop valves.
Yep, I will. I just added them to my own index, so I will I'll make sure that a copy goes to the office on each of those.
Okay, please do that. Thank you. And another question.
No problem.
So did we make any headway with finding out if there's a water main up in on Biasca?
As far as the mapping shows, there is in fact water main on Biasca, but I can't. I've never dug anything in that area. So I mean, short of the very very beginning of the intersection. So, but anything past that first house on Biasca, I've never dug anything up past there. So, but as far as the mapping shows, it goes right up to the end of it.
Okay, and there's
again,
no curb stops up there at all?
Say it again?
There's no properties up there on the water system?
I believe every property on there is on the water system.
Yeah, they are.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so there is a water main on Biasca.
Where it ends, I don't know. I'm not sure what lot somebody was talking about hooking onto or anything, but yeah, the very last property currently existing on there has water, you know, is connected to the water main.
Okay, so we just have to formulate a response to the property owner because they are interested in hooking up to the water system.
Sure.
And
okay.
Ian, on that same note, Ian, I have now an email on my hand. A potential buyer of a lot is looking for the closest water main to number 22 Aspen Drive, and the bleed.
Yeah, I think we talked.
Yep.
I thought we talked about this last week, but 22 is going to be just, I would say, in the no man's land between the two dead ends of on Aspen, the one coming up from Jungfrau PRV and the one going downhill of what will be the new pressure zone.
Yeah, so what they're asking, they do realize that now, the bleeder valve is at number 24. They're asking what the cost might be to extend that water main down to their lot at number 22.
I would say if you guys, Chris just kind of said, I think Dawson probably is going to have time when he gets to the end of that. He would probably match whatever he gave you guys for a bid to continue that, along with that wedge removal additional cost. So whatever that, I don't know what the cost per foot was on that pipe, but my guess is you'd be looking from that bleeder to whatever the end of that property line is, if that's or however you guys opt to, you know, require the main to be extended. Again, I suggest to go to the end of the property line. So that would be a better conversation to have with Dawson, because our cost on that is essentially or whatever contract we could get an estimate from Dawson and see if he would just continue along once he was already there.
Okay. All right. I'll try to get some numbers from Dawson, and then we'll just put that in an email back.
That's probably going to happen. They're going to be to that point within probably a week or so.
Yep.
So maybe 10 days, whatever, you know, within the next few weeks. So I would say, you know, yeah, the sooner I'll be up there and see Dawson today so I can ask him to go down and give us an estimate on that.
Okay.
Of course, they're all responsible to have.
So
if they're responsible for it.
Right. I think the homeowner or the property owner in Dawson should be having that discussion.
Well, actually, it's the water main that needs to be extended. So that's our
right.
property. And then whatever they want to do as far as their service line would be with Dawson or anyone else.
Well, so you guys know, we've allowed the homeowner to find a contractor on their own, even for the water main extension, as long as it is installed to our specifications, and we would do the same, you know.
Okay.
Okay. Excuse me. Can I just clarify something? This is a realtor that's looking to sell the property, and they just want to know cost figure. There's no homeowner. There's no property owner.
It's
a realtor. It's
they're looking to sell prospective buyers. It's $25,000 to connect to the water main, essentially, or whatever. They want a number to give a prospective buyer.
Okay. I thought it was the property owner. It's a potential buyer that's looking for the information.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So we'll have to come up with a.
I mean, you guys tell me. I can go wheel it off, pull out, you know, if it's 500 feet, and just ask Dawson if he'd be willing. But that's going to change, you know. I mean, if this isn't done at the same time that the hammer's there and the big excavator's there and everything else, and somebody has to come back or you know, I mean, send all that equipment in, then you're talking, you know, an extra few. I mean, it's going to be different versus, you know, your cost per foot's going to double if you know, somebody has to come back in. So it doesn't sound like something's going to happen in 2 weeks. So, I mean, really, that's the email I'd say to them is when they're ready to do it, they'll have, but, you know, you can look at an average cost of pipeline is, you know, $85 a foot and $85 per yard of ledge. And, you know, that's what we can give you for info. And if and when that time comes, you guys are going to have to price search that again.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So Jay, we'll have to figure something out on that. Okay. All right. Thank you, Donna, for clarification. That made a difference.
Okay. Yeah.
All
thank
right.
You.
Thanks, Ian.
Yep.
All right.
Anything else?
I don't think so, Ian. I do.
Okay.
I did see the homeowner at number 10 Barden Place,
yep.
And he's going pretty fast on the house. He's putting the roof on today, and just wondering if he can.
On, yep, they are on. I can tell you right now. Sorry, just looking at what day it was. It looks like they are Tuesday of next week.
Tuesday. Okay, great.
Can I notify the gentleman, or has he been notified?
No, I think the only thing I had sent is that we were looking at doing it in the next few weeks. I hadn't, you know, I kind of have to take my days as the contractor's available. So we just got word that Tuesday should be available. There's a possibility, Donna, that it might flip-flop. We have excavation days on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So maybe the best thing to do is just let them know that it's one of those 3 days, sometime between the 15th and the 17th. We'll be there to install the curb valve.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
All right.
Well, thanks, Ian.
Thank you, Ian.
All set? Thank you, guys.
Yep. Okay. Bye. I'm just going to take this long pole and poke Kelly to wake him up. He's been dozing off here. So, Kelly, you got the microphone.
All right. I'd like to know if I can go ahead and do Paul Gretchen, homeowner culvert pipe. It's been approved. They said they want to go ahead. Do
yep.
I do the project and then give you the cost of the culvert and then bill them?
Yeah, unless you know what the cost is right up front.
Until I buy it and have it in hand.
Okay.
So I can. That's what I'm going to do then.
I was going to. That's why I have it on the agenda. I was going to ask you when.
That's go ahead.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
There's a homeowner complaining of an exposed driveway culvert on Porridge Shore Drive. They're also saying there's a rock protruding from the road and at the pipe, which there is. Are we liable to cover over an exposed culvert pipe?
Is it a driveway?
I'll take the rock out because the rock is more in our road than in their driveway. We can pull that rock out, but the pipe, it's a driveway culvert, but it's an old metal driveway culvert that is exposed. I don't want to do any work in anyone's driveway. I'm not supposed to, so do we notify them? They're on their own to get a load of gravel in there and have it spread?
So I would assume, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not sure exactly where this culvert is, but if it's a driveway culvert, it's probably within our deeded property, right? The ditches. Okay. And so the question then becomes, has their plow driver scraped enough of the gravel off the top of that over the years to now expose the pipe? That's usually what happens, erosion and wear. And the plow is one of the biggest things that I always have to go back and build a berm up at the end of my driveway every spring. These are the folks that were asking for a load of fill.
Yep.
And are they going to spread it themselves? Is that what the
intent? Yeah, they've done it in the past.
Oh, okay.
Done it to them before.
And is that what they're going to do is cover the culvert?
Nope.
Oh, it's something else.
They're complaining of an exposed culvert and a rock.
And I would think the driveway culvert, as we've been talking about culverts all year long, that, you know, the homeowner currently purchases a culvert and we do them the courtesy of the installation, but the driveway culvert belongs to the homeowner.
No, it's actually the property of the district because it's in district property.
It's not the pipe is still functioning. It wouldn't be a replacement. They'd be covering it with new gravel, which I feel is repairing the driveway.
Right. Yeah, I have the same. I mean, I'll be honest. I go through the same issue every spring. My plow guy takes my little berm down, and in the spring I build it back up. I don't have a culvert, but I have to have a berm to keep the water from coming down my driveway. I would suspect this would be the same. I wouldn't start repairing people's driveways. We had a request just the other day when you were on site at Little Loop to go and bring some fill at the bottom of someone else's driveway.
Yeah.
And it's not, that would have actually impeded the drainage on that road. That would not have been a good idea. But no, we can't run around fixing people's driveways.
There's so many precedents set in this district that you do for some and not for others, and I'm caught in that now.
Yeah. No, that's my Kathy, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I think a driveway culvert, the ordinance, unfortunately, the ordinance says that the DPW is responsible for cleaning and maintaining driveway culverts.
Right.
So.
But if the homeowner actually wears the covering off the culvert through the use of their contractor or themselves, are we responsible for continually going back and placing gravel back onto the culvert?
Right. And if it's erosion versus a plow, their plow truck.
There's no gravel on this driveway. This has been happening over time. It's not, I wouldn't say it's caused to a plow truck. This is erosion. It's time.
Is it just the culvert's not deep enough? Is it the culvert should be down deeper?
Oh, of course it should be, but it doesn't mean it can be.
I mean, is that a solution? If they're willing to purchase a new culvert, then it can be, and then it can get set properly?
That's a great solution. I'd like to do that to so many driveways. Now we're getting into sending them a letter and getting permission, and we can do that.
And then that would...
up to you guys.
I mean, what do you think about that, Jay? I mean, does that sound like, because that's basically what we've been doing with the other four or five properties, is that if they want to purchase a culvert, and then we can have DPW set it properly, and that'll fix the problem.
Yeah, I guess, is this metal, is there a bottom to this one?
It's metal, it's old. I mean, it's functioning, but of course it could be replaced.
We can offer them that solution. But, I'm thinking how much popularity that might get, and what that would mean to our DPW as far as their scheduling and such.
I mean, that's what we've offered to 40. We've offered that to 47 and 49 Idlewise Drive, and
yeah.
You know, multiple others.
Yeah, because those drainage systems have failed, and so we're offering a solution. So I would say this falls into the same game plan as those.
Yeah.
So do we want to send the homeowner a letter asking for her or him to purchase the culvert, and the district will replace the existing one that's there at the proper.
We'll purchase it. We'll purchase the culvert, and they will reimburse us. We don't want them going out to, you know, their local store to buy a culvert.
Yeah,
we'll purchase the culvert. Okay, just make sure that's clear.
Yeah.
And then
okay,
if Kelly can provide. I don't know what the length of that culvert is or what diameter it should be.
15, minimum.
Okay. Okay. If we know the cost is a 15 by, what is that, 20 feet, 25 feet?
Yeah, usually 20.
What I do is I take 250, and then when I purchase the culvert, that's when they pay, when I have actual number.
Okay.
So we send them a letter saying at 250, they can, that usually works, and then it usually comes in less than that, around 200 or so, but I can't guarantee the price.
Okay. Well, it's always better to be a little... couple dollars high for sure.
Yeah,
okay.
there is gravel involved too with covering it, so it covers us.
Okay.
I think 250 is a good number to keep it at probably because there is some other expense associated.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Do you want to make a motion to send the homeowner a letter? I'll make that motion with the offer of replacing the culvert. Second, Kathy?
Yeah, I will second that.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion?
Nope.
Okay, all in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
That was on Forge. That was Forge. Sure. Okay. Okay.
All right, lastly, we worked on Little Loop warrant article for 3 days, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. We're going back either today or tomorrow, just minor, finishing up some seeding and a little bit of cementing, but it is done, and it puts the Rhinac tank project to shame.
is that a monument to culverts over there?
Yes, it is.
Have you seen it, Kathy?
No, I have not, actually.
You got to go by. It came out really nice. I visited each day, only to be a pain in the neck to the three guys doing it. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you,
that's why I see it clear.
Yeah, they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Did you take this?
So for anybody on the call, this was a warrant article that was approved in 2018 for approximately $20,000. Though we had some leftover money, Kelly and his crew came up with some ideas to actually reduce the cost of this, in which money was used elsewhere on that road. But you got to go take a look at this project that Kelly and his crew did. It really came out nice looking. I believe both property owners should be very happy with the work that was done, and those folks that use that road.
Of course, is that.
You won't have the drainage issues that you've had there in the past. So great job, Kelly, and Tony, and Jeff.
Yeah. So now can
absolutely.
We carry forward and start pulling stumps and upgrade the road? Is that a go-ahead to do such a thing, or are we going to go back to my original idea of getting some kind of engineering for the road?
I think we might want to hold off and get some engineering so you know.
I think the survey was the big part. You know, even doing ditching, you're going to have to pull the stumps no matter what. Correct?
Right.
Whether it's just ditching or re-engineering of the road, the stumps are going to have to be removed.
Right. But when he pulls the stumps, he's going to have to fill the hole with gravel. and where he might be filling the hole with gravel might be where the drainage is supposed to go if he had an engineering drawing. So
and
I'm thinking
at, but
that
if we're doing an engineered if we're doing an engineered project, you're looking at 2 years away, wouldn't you think?
No, exactly. And by the time those, if those stumps are in the ground for another 2 years, they're going to come out, they're going to be real soft and squishy. Might actually be a little easier. The other thing I'm concerned about, too, is the let the roots die out and rot a little bit, because if they're wrapped around the water line, you don't want to pull them and pull a water line up with it. I don't know how many of those trees might be next to a curb or near a curb stop valve to a house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just, it's a okay. It's a big project to get into for just the maintenance.
Right.
If we're going to do the road, I've always said we should do the road. Anytime I change drainage, like I've told everyone, it's going to interfere with driveways. It's going to interfere, it's going to put drainage where it's never gone before.
Right.
Okay. Maybe it makes sense to leave them there then.
Yeah, for now.
All right.
Okay.
We just thought that if we got the excavator, that would be the time to do it.
Yep.
No.
Okay. Just real quick, I brought up at the beginning of the meeting with the modification of the agenda. There's a camper, trail home, I believe is what it's more officially called. Down at the Hutwell parking lot. Do we want to notify Madison police to investigate who may own that? Why it's sitting there with the doors wide open. It's full of trash and construction material.
Yeah, I saw the tarp on the side of it, but I didn't go into it. So it's not even enclosed completely, is it?
No, it's not. No. So you want me to, Donna, I can do it. Donna or Kathy, I can make the phone call to PD after this meeting if you want.
Yes, I'd like to make a motion for Jay to notify Madison Police.
Okay. Seconded. All in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Okay. All right. Kelly,
looks like
anything else?
You might have to get a bigger dumpster for that trailer.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Oh, actually, Kelly, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
First, did you get Wi-Fi back on your Chromebook?
No, and I'm leaving my Chromebook in the office for someone to figure out.
Okay.
I'll try to figure it out,
okay.
Kathy.
Okay, I didn't know if you had a chance to do that yesterday. Okay. And there was two things I was going to ask you. One was about that. And I sent that Department of Labor email back to you. I sent it originally on May 15th, and I just forwarded it again this morning. So once you get the Chromebook set up, you'll see that. Okay.
All right. Well, we still have Kelly here. There was a correspondence that came in from a resident at number 33, Upper Lakeview. And since you don't have the email, you haven't seen it. But I'm gonna,
I have seen that one.
Oh, yeah. So I want to read it to you so we can try to decide what to do with this. This is a resident where we've asked for a drainage easement over a year ago, and it starts off with VDUE Board of Commissioners. On 26 May 2020, we received an email forwarding a letter from the BOC dated 18 May requesting we call and set up a date at our convenience to discuss with the BOC the drainage on Upper Lakeview Road onto our property. I immediately called to schedule an appointment. No one answered and the voicemail assured me that someone would call me back. As of today, which is the 5th of June, I have not heard a word from you. When we were first notified that you wanted to drain Upper Lakeview Drive onto our property, there were no details provided. I responded with a list of questions concerning the size of the culvert, whether it would drain into a rock-lined swale, estimate of the amount of water we were taking about, and asked a copy of the engineering drawing. Adam Liza responded by phone. What little information he attempted to provide was wrong. He had never been up on Upper Lakeview Drive, and it was unfamiliar with it. So why was he chosen instead of the Public Works Director? We finally received the drawing, which was a small section of a tax map, with a short line drawn on the road, a squiggly line coming out from Alvit, running clear across our property. To add injury to insult, it was accompanied with a comment, "We simplified the drawing for you." My great-granddaughter could have done better, but then she is not under the illusion that we are such simpletons. The next attempt was the same drawing that had been enlarged slightly and a couple of annotations as to how far it was to the driveway. At that point, we were told when the weather got better and more details were known, we would get together and you would provide pictures and information. We did drive up to attend the public presentation on Edelweiss Road and plans, but was stated that it was a high-level overview and not for details, which was a wasted trip. In almost 30 years since building our place, we've never observed standing water on the road or erosion around our driveway. I have yet to hear of a single advantage to us property owners. I was the chairman of the Tiverton Conservation Commission for 8 years, was the environmental advocate to the planning board, and spent 10 years on the zoning board. In addition, I drafted town ordinance on soil erosion and sedimentation control. I never once heard or seen where a homeowner benefited from water being dumped onto their property. Much more common is how to control or divert water from their property. We are still willing to meet with you if it can be productive. My wife has a number of issues. I'm not going to go over that. And I don't want to subject her to a four-hour car ride each way and resulting in discomfort. I'm going to get the same old song and dance. And then he writes, "I await your call to set up a meeting." And this is the resident at 33 Upper Lakeview Drive. So, Kelly, is it worth having this?
No, let's do nothing. I'll deal with it another way. Let's not affect the homeowner. If there's no water problem that he sees with his property, then I can't convince someone. That's not my business, is to go stand in someone's driveway and argue with them that the water's a problem.
Right, right. But how does that affect our road, though?
Yeah, because that's what brought this all up, was our request, right. Not his.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Oh, there's standing water. There's been standing water for the 6 years I've been here. It's a sizable puddle, especially in the spring. But if you don't mind driving through it, I don't mind driving through it. I mean, I don't know what to do with this. People, all right, you guys decide.
So is it a safety concern in the wintertime when that freezes?
No. Nope.
Okay. Is there a reason, and
I think the concern was all the money that was allocated on the prior year to do the upgrade to that section of the road to not lose it in 5 years.
People
right?
can say no to drainage going on their property. It's happened before.
Right.
He's saying no, right. Then no means no. We'll deal with
right.
it. Unfortunately, it's sitting on ledge, and ledge it cannot sink into the ground through ledge. It sits on the surface.
But we had a concern about maintaining that upgrade. So is there a reasonable workaround that wouldn't enter onto that 33 Upper Lakeview property? Is there another way to alleviate the problem?
No, as I was saying, it sits in kind of a gully there. There's a hill on either side. You can't run it uphill, so it's going to sit where it is or it's going to cross the road. Now it's crossing the road on its own. I may just fill in the depression where it gathers and let it cross the road. I'm not going to meet with a aggravated homeowner to get into a discussion. That's not a smart move for me.
Okay. Or for the district.
No.
Okay.
I'll find a way around it. If he doesn't have a problem with the water, what it's doing now, I won't change that. It'll just keep doing it.
And if you flatten out that little... Okay. All right, so Jay, is there something...
Go ahead, Kathy.
I said, Jay, I mean, you want to draft a letter? I think we definitely owe him a quick response. Just maybe, you know, indicating that, you know, upon review, the DPW has an alternative that wouldn't affect your property. We apologize for inconveniencing you. Certainly we owe him something.
Yeah, I mean, I can certainly just draft a very simple letter saying that we have no plans on diverting the water to your property on the other side of the street. Unfortunately, and I think he realizes this because it's quite evident, is that the water from that puddle does go across the street
anyway,
onto the property anyhow. We're just asking mm-hmm. to carry it under the street.
Right.
But if he doesn't want to have us put in the culvert, then we'll allow it to continue to go across the street. Maybe we can put a larger size aggregate in the gravel there. To
we'll raise the road,
yeah.
Do other things.
Yeah.
And that way
but,
it's flat,
yeah.
To disperse the water, not having it run in a narrow spot.
Right. So I'll draft a letter to him as polite as can be, and we'll correspond with him. He certainly deserves that. So we'll get
yeah.
that letter drafted this week, and then we can review okay. it for next week's okay. meeting and send it out. Okay?
Okay. But and maybe
says,
even if John... Lesson
learned. Lesson learned that, you know, that it was gone about wrong. Let's not do it again.
Okay.
Got it. All right.
Because that was 33 Upper Lakeview. Is there any other road issues, Kelly? How about your trucks and equipment? Everything running fine?
Yeah, we both trucks are having backup alarms installed right now to comply with the Department
Yay.
Of Labor. Yeah,
okay.
So they're both up there having that done. The big truck is going to go into service hopefully next week, just basic service. And then the backhoe, again, needs service. But this is all just standard things we do every year. Nothing out of the ordinary right now.
Okay.
Okay.
Anything else, Kelly?
Nope.
Wow.
Nope.
Good job, by the way,
easy.
On Little Loaf.
Yeah.
So now we're going to switch over to Donna. Donna's got the microphone. All to yourself.
No, everything's status quo here. Still trying to dig out from underneath. The only question I have a concern with is this kayak portal. According to Andrew, it should be fixed. I got all kinds of emails yesterday that I had to deal with because it wasn't, so I worked with Andrew to fix them. I'm just nervous that they're opening the portal on Friday. On a regular basis, there's nobody in the office on Friday, and it's not going to make the people happy if the portal isn't properly working. That's my concern.
Well, you know what, Donna? I thought the same thing, too, that somebody has to be available. And if it's okay with Jay, can we switch the office email to forward it to my email as well, to forward to me, and then I will just monitor it throughout the day on Friday?
No.
Okay.
Who said no?
This is Mary McCusker. I think that we've had a really good system there, and I think that things are going great. I mean, everything's starting to open up. But when people go to get their kayaks or their canoes, it's not a big deal. And if you just open it up, turn it over, have everybody call in and pay the, you know, what they have to pay every year, it would be a good thing. Okay. It wouldn't
Wait,
be
so,
a bad thing.
No, we are going to open up the kayak registration for Friday. Mm. So there's no payment that'll be necessary. We don't charge for that, but we just needed to have an organized way of assigning spaces to property owners for the kayak racks. And this is the first year that we're doing sort of an automated system, and we just wanted to make sure that if anybody ran into a electronic website problem, that there'd be somebody on hand to answer that question or to reach out to Andrew to make sure that they didn't get shut out of being able to register for a spay on Friday. That's all.
Okay. But have you been on the beaches at all?
I might go by them, yeah. I haven't been on them.
Okay, well, I'm on the beaches all the time. And I've never seen more than, you know, one person go to get the kayak or the canoe and go down. It's not a social distancing problem, I don't think. And I think
right.
if you can
nope.
get everything working fine, I think that'd be a great thing.
Yeah, and that was the plan. We did put the kayak rack assignment on hold, and based on
yeah.
the opening up of public spaces, we are going to open mm-hmm. them up. So on Friday, tomorrow, people will be able to pick a spot on the rack through this electronic portal based on the beach they want to be at, and then they can bring their kayak or their canoe and leave it there for the remainder of the season. So that
okay.
is what we're doing.
Good. And how about the bathrooms? Because I don't know if you've been down Edelweiss Beach and see all the toilet paper around everywhere.
Well, no, that's the double-edged sword. I know. And we're kind of trying to mirror what the town of Madison mm-hmm. is doing with their beaches
yeah.
on Silver Lake. And they are keeping they're not putting outhouses out on their beaches. Now, if we open up our outhouses, we were concerned that we would be facilitating everybody else in the town of Madison, and they'd be scooting through our district to use our bathrooms. So we were trying to kind of stay in lockstep with what Madison was doing. I took a ride down the Kangamangas, and the majority of the day areas and the pull-offs and the rest areas, all of those bathroom facilities are closed as well. And the problem is, unless you can have somebody go in between every user and wipe down the facility, they shouldn't be open. And that's something we just will not be able to do.
Okay, but I think if you look at our beaches here, they're pretty clean.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one and two, okay? And people, well, hopefully, you know, one person will go in at a time. And
I
know when Gloria did them, she had, you know, hand sanitizer, she had everything going
mm-hmm.
on.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
and I think, you know, you shouldn't close the beaches because when I see all the toilet paper and water mm-hmm. bottles and all the crap on Edelweiss Beach, it's kind of terrible.
I know. And so, Jay, do you want to speak to that, please?
Yes. So with what, the outhouses themselves?
Well,
yes,
just kind of the whole, yeah.
Yeah, so we have a couple of things happening. We want to try to mirror what's happening in the town of Madison so that one set of beaches is not more attractive than another set of beaches. We also have concerns from the EPOA, which we'll talk about in a minute here, about non-residents being able to use our beaches.
Oh, my God.
But in general, what I've seen, and I sent some information out last night from the what is called Phase 2, New Hampshire Phase 2.
Yeah.
With regards to outhouses at state mm-hmm. park beaches, mm-hmm. what they call inland beaches, not seacoast beaches.
Right. Exactly.
There's a universal guidelines that are mm-hmm. Online, and we have to, Kathy and I have to take a close look at what that entails, because I did see yesterday at the Boulder Loop Trail on the Kangamangas Highway that the outhouses are open, but mm-hmm. there's signage on the outside. You have to have a ton of signage for people to know whether they're entering a safe area or not. You then have to have cleaning done on a daily basis, as is done on the ones on the Kank. They have to describe what cleaning solutions you're using. This may be so complicated just to open an outhouse. It may not be worth it.
Yeah.
We're going to take a look at that. Yeah.
Okay.
We're going to take
but
a look at it.
My concern is that you don't know, all the toilet paper and all the stuff left on the outhouses. It's not, I don't know if it's feasible, because you know what, each one, you have one and two, and they're all locked up. But you know what, if you let the person in, let's face it, if you want to go in the bathroom, you want to be alone. You know, let them go in and go to the bathroom, and they're going to throw the toilet paper in the toilet. They're not going to throw it on the ground anymore. I don't know. Do you agree?
It's a double-edged sword. It really is. It's unfortunate that we're in the situation we're in. And
I know.
The whole purpose is to try to convince people to stay at home and not make our beaches an attractive place to go. And so we're trying to make sure people are safe and that we're complying with the state of New Hampshire and the CDC and the Board of Health, that, you know, that we're trying to encourage people to not go to the beaches.
Well, they come anyway.
I know. Yeah, I know. And it would be worth it. So.
The other concern
Go ahead.
The other concern we have is that the Madison Transfer Station will no longer be allowing non-residents to use the transfer station.
Oh.
And if you are aware, we just spent $3,000 to clean those outhouses out of trash, where people dispose of their household trash bags down that hole. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yep. And we don't want. Now that visitors cannot use a transfer station, we're thinking they're going to use our outhouses. So we have to be aware of that. It may become like Kathy said, a double-edged sword, and it may actually not work out for us. So
I realize that.
So Jay, what is the next update coming from the state?
The next update is going to from the. From the governor's office, it's going to be on the 15th of June, and the selectmen will be meeting on the 16th to make their decisions based on what the governor says.
Okay. And then we're meeting next Thursday on the 18th, so maybe there will be a listing of some of those sanctions so that we can then go ahead and open those outhouses if the rest of Madison is going to do the same.
Right.
If that's the same thing.
I just think it would be a good thing so we can stop having all the trash over by the outhouses.
Yeah, I know.
You know.
Well, if the trash is on the outside, is it regular household trash you're seeing?
No, just
water bottles, toilet paper, everything, cans.
Yeah, see, that's going to probably end up down the hole of the outhouse if there's. Because we don't have trash barrels on the beaches. It's carry in, carry out.
But she's concerned about people relieving themselves next to the outhouses and leaving everything there.
Okay. I'm not aware of that, but if that's happening, that's not a good thing.
No it's not.
Okay.
Well, look, at you guys, you know, you're trying your hardest, and I appreciate that.
So we definitely want to make sure everybody stays safe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. All right, well, you guys have a nice day.
All right, well, thank you for calling. We appreciate hearing from you.
All right.
So, Donna? Donna?
Yeah.
So, would it make... I don't know if I'm causing an echo or not.
I wanted to make a quick comment.
Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
The email that you guys sent out, the newsletter, said that the kayak racks are opening on the 15th, which is Monday. And the EPOA then sent out another email for their people saying the same thing. So I think most people probably think the kayak rack registration opens on Monday. If you open it on Friday, and all those people that you put in your newsletter think that it opens Monday and they don't get the spot that they want, you're going to have a lot of angry people. So I think if it's opening Friday... You guys need to fix that because on the website it says the 12th, but your newsletter says the 15th. So if that was a typo, you should just send out a correction.
Right, you know what? That was my fault. Thank you for catching that. So do we want to change it to Monday the 15th? We'll keep it on the 12th.
Keep it Monday.
I'd keep it on Monday.
Yeah, that
just
way.
Just because somebody's in the office.
Yeah, Donna will be here, at least be able to field a few of the calls that might come in.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Paula.
Yeah, I will make that clarification. Thank you.
Okay.
So we'll do this Monday the 15th.
Yeah. And is there there's one other thing I want to Kelly's still here. One Aspen Drive.
Yeah.
Did we ever correspond with that woman about setting up an on-site meeting?
I didn't. I thought somebody was taking care of that.
I actually went to see the site and got out of my vehicle, and the homeowner came out, so I got a very good explanation of what was happening. I still think I can't speak for the board. I won't speak for the board, but I still think it would be worthwhile to have Kathy, myself.
Yeah, there was supposed to be a meeting set up, but nobody told me when and where.
Okay. So I'll find her email and then send her an email.
Mm-hmm.
Was that how she corresponded, through email?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll send her an email asking for her convenient dates so that we can all just drive down there and take a look at it. It'll be an official commissioner's meeting at that point. Okay? I didn't want to forget that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Under the admin portion, which we're under now with Donna, Kathy, you have the ad going out in the Conway Sun and Union Leader this week. Is that correct?
Next week.
We're going to wait until next week on the 18th.
Yep.
Okay, 18th. All right. And garage doors, the guy came by. Oh, we have to move the light.
The electrician has to come in first, so we'll still on hold for that.
Okay. We already had Mike speak. Nick Borelli's all set. And we have a potential two new water hookups. Is that correct, Donna?
I had one person called in, maybe dropping something off. I have another one that he has to send the he's checking in on the application. I sent him an application note.
Okay. Terrific. Mike, you still got stuff? Okay, go ahead, Mike.
Okay. I got a couple questions concerning the contract on Reinach.
Yep.
And this comes from was the contract ever run by our attorney?
No, it was not. I made a suggestion to that point, but was outvoted.
So this sounds like all contracts that the village district have ever executed have always run by our attorney or their firm. This is the first time this has not happened. Who voted against you, Jay? Obviously, is it Kathy and Adam?
I'll let Kathy answer
that. Yeah, if they were outvoted, that would be the assumption.
Yeah.
2-1, yep.
What was the reason for not voting for Kathy?
Because I had confidence in the engineer that was putting together the contract.
The engineer is not an attorney.
I understand that.
I mean, I don't understand your vote for it. My next question is, I've heard that Rick Shirinka said that the village district's going to have their pockets picked. Is there any truth to that concerning this contract?
What do you mean
no.
by proof, Mike? Did he put it in writing?
I've heard scuttlebutt that Rick said that the village district pockets were going to be picked. So is that factual or not?
No, I'm getting a lot of echo here, unfortunately. The only thing that he may have been referring to is when we were looking at other waterline extension projects, that if we didn't do the ledge probes to determine whether or not there was ledge in those areas, the contractor would be giving us a higher bid because they wouldn't know either. So that was sort of the reason, that was the reason why we went ahead and had SW Cole do the ledge probes, so that we would get better pricing on pipeline replacement. So that may be where that would come from.
In other words, Rick never said that.
No, he alluded to getting better pricing if we knew whether or not there was ledge in the roads that would be having pipeline replacement. Not about the contract itself. It was strictly if we didn't do ledge probes and he didn't use those words, having your pockets picked, I don't believe. But he said, you know, you're going to get higher prices if the contractor doesn't know whether or not there's ledge in those locations.
Yeah, so Mike, I think you're referring to a conversation that I had with Rick Skoranker after the meeting that was held down in Concord between Rick and some other member in his department, as well as Ian, Chris Albert, and Adam. And I had called after the meeting to find out what was it about, because we were told that the meeting was because there was a mistake on a drawing, and that's why they were going down. The information that I received was that Rick was very concerned at the way the contract was written, in that it was very wide open. I'm trying to think of the exact words that would lead the village to possibly be spending
open-ended.
A lot more money than they should be. Yeah, open-ended. I'm sorry, open-ended. So I believe, and I don't know if there were changes made to the wording in the contract. I know there were changes made to the drawing as far as the topographical increments. And to Kathy's point, ledge probes was an important piece because you needed to know, have a better handle on how much ledge you had, because if you went into this project and it was assumed that there'd only be 25 yards of ledge removed and you ended up with 1,000 yards, that's what they call the added cost, and we would not have had enough money for the project. So that, to the open-endedness, that is something that he wanted to close. Unfortunately, we just got the results from the ledge probes, what was it, last week, even though the project's already started.
Well, Jay, the ledge probes that we did were what, on Upper Lakeview, was that on Middle Shore, and what was the other road?
Well, Bristenstock, Aspen. Aspen, and Reinhardt.
No. I think what Chris said was they used ledge probe information from 2 years ago.
No, that was at the very tank. That was the tank site itself. That is correct.
That was just the tank.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So there was a ledge probing already done up in that vicinity.
No, not on Bristenstock, Aspen, or Reinhardt. I was actually up there with Kelly, and we were watching the guy drilling the holes. That was just a week and a half ago.
Okay.
So they've already started laying the line, and, you know, I talked with the guys just 2 days ago because they're hitting ledge up on the upper portion of Bristenstock, and I said, well, didn't you know that ledge was at 3 feet because of the probes? And they said, well, the probes weren't drilled right here. So that was a sort of a surprise that they ran into, which has slowed them down a little bit in the past 2 days.
But that contingency was built into the contract.
No, we only have the allowance for 200 cubic yards of rock or ledge, called rock or ledge. And I don't know where we are as far as the total cumulative yardage for that yet. And that's what the ledge probes would help you get the better price on that. The more accurate price, not a better price, a more accurate price of what that's going to actually cost you. And I think Kelly knows more than anybody.
I don't remember seeing anything that Rick stated that we were going to get our pockets picked. And after the meeting that he had with Chris and Adam, and I think Ian might have gone too, Rick Skoranker approved the contract.
Yeah, no, he did. Absolutely.
Okay.
No, it wasn't anything Rick sent in. It was a conversation. I actually called Rick by phone.
Okay.
This is something that Adam...
How come you didn't go down to the meeting in Concord?
I wasn't invited.
What do you mean you weren't invited?
Kathy and I were made aware of the meeting on, I believe it was maybe it was Wednesday when we had our meetings on Tuesdays. We were told the day before that there would be a meeting the next day in Concord. There was no 24-hour notice to have it made as a commissioner's meeting.
So the meeting was held with one commissioner?
That is correct.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable what went on here. So my next question, I'm still concerned about the attorney not viewing the contract. Kathy, I meant you should resign over that. You should absolutely resign. You are not protecting the village district whatsoever. when you go ahead and think that the engineer, who is not an attorney, knows all the ins and outs of the contract, I'm sorry.
Well, it went to the state of New Hampshire, Mike, and I would trust not only the engineering firm who does this for a living, but also Rick Skoranko at DES.
The protected interest is your engineer, not DES, and your attorney. There is never a contract that I know of, and I've been here a long time, that has not, a big contract or a contract has not gone to our attorney for review. This is crazy what's gone on here. And you should absolutely resign immediately. There is no ands, ifs, or buts. You sign that contract, you put the Village District at a big problem right now.
I appreciate your input, Mike. Thank you.
Mike, we got what we got, and we're going to try to make the best of it. There's 361 pages to the specification, and I'll tell you, I'm still reading through it every day. And I have to applaud Larry Sedano for, he reads this stuff all the time, and I hope that he has the time to be able to give us some better insight as to when we get change orders, which we haven't gotten one yet, which is great. But there were some things in there, for example, I think Kelly's the one who brought it up early during the pre-construction meeting, was that there's really no mention of putting our roads back together or our culverts back together. They're just leaving them in place, and some of them are non-functional.
What are you going to do about that, then? Are you going to put used culverts back in?
That's what is exactly happening per the contract.
The engineer should have errors and omissions insurance. If he missed something, that's what it's covered under.
You know, Mike, if Kelly had been part of the design of this and what the impact would be after a water main is replaced on a paved or gravel road and all the culverts that may be crossing that road laterally, and he did speak up, but was told at that meeting that they don't even know how many culverts there are. I counted 13. The contractor thought he saw 30. The engineer said he didn't know because it was in the wintertime, so he couldn't see them. So these are the types of things that I know on previous experiences, Mike, previous projects, we knew exactly what we wanted the road to look like after a water main was installed. And that was all part of the same scope of the project. Kelly was not included. Kathy and I were not really included in this design phase at all. It was really left to the engineer.
And that's a problem. Your engineer is not representing the Village District.
I think he's representing the engineering of the project, but he did not reach out or was allowed to reach out to get the other input from, especially from Kelly and the other two commissioners.
Well, let me ask another question then. How did the Village District end up with this engineer?
It was voted on at a commissioner's meeting to replace.
And how was he recommended to you?
I think Ian had given his name to us during a water committee meeting.
That's a different story than what I've heard.
Okay. I mean, that's what I remember in being in a water committee meeting. Is this gentleman's name was brought up, and so we decided to look at his background and do some phone calls of other agencies that he has worked for, and we all got good news.
Yeah, other municipalities, yeah.
Yep.
What was that again, Kathy?
I said, Jay said other agencies, but it was other municipalities that Jones and Beach has worked for.
Okay. I think that the Village District is making a mistake putting culverts, letting them put culverts in that have been in there for 18 years, and that there could be a claim here on the Village District's part to the engineer because he missed it. Whereas you people should be working a deal with the engineer where somebody purchases the new culverts and somebody pays for them and do it and work a deal, just like the driveway. Putting broken culverts back in does the village district absolutely no good. You're going to end up digging them up in a couple years or within time and have to replace them.
So what's the contract?
Because Kelly and Chris walked that road, and I know they are trying to come up with a plan. Several of the culverts, they actually dug right underneath and did not disturb them. So it's not as if every single culvert was cut and patched back together again.
Go ahead, Kelly.
What I was told is that the roads were never a consideration in the project. It was a water project, not a road project, so the roads weren't considered. The rule that they're following is if the contractor damages a culvert, then they're responsible to replace it. My argument was that the road should have been a consideration and outdated culverts should have been replaced as part of the project, and that the whole road should have been paved. It should have been part of the project. Just like Oak was, when a water line was put in, there was new pavement applied to finish the project. I'm trying to protect myself by bringing this out. I'm not just complaining, but it was done wrong that the roads weren't a consideration.
There's an oversight on behalf of the engineer. This comes under errors and omissions insurance. There's no ands, ifs, or buts about this.
The engineer told Jay and I that the roads weren't a consideration.
Yeah. And the village district is suffering because of it right now.
We're going to have to deal with it, Mike. You're right.
You know?
I think I have to see it as a biggest problem that I see is that the initial contract, when it was proposed to contractors, said that there'd be no blasting on site. The contract has bid it higher than usual in anticipation that they were going to have to do another way, and not the blasting. So I'm hearing from contractors that bid on this that said, I thought there was no blasting. That's why they went higher on their bid. I hate that the district getting black eyes for contractors. I've been trying to fix that since I started working here. It wasn't presented properly to the contractors that they would have to hammer, which is more costly to them than you just haul in a blasting crew and blast it. So just another mistake that we're going to really have to keep an eye on in the future. And I've been told I'll be part of these in the future, and I think that could have been helpful.
So meanwhile, the village district's going to suffer over it.
Yep.
No, I think, Mike, to your point, I think if we had all been involved in the planning and knowing that a 4,400 feet of water main was going in, especially underneath a good section of paved road, that, by the way, $4,000 was spent on that road to shim it last year, that we definitely would have replaced, first of all, the culverts that the water main is passing underneath, and then significantly even more is the paving. Because if you take those 19 homes, and there will be lateral cuts made across the road to do the service lines for those 19 homes, and then you add another 13 culverts that are possibly being replaced, you now have so many lateral cuts across this road, there's really no pavement left.
Absolutely.
And I had asked the question, well, and I went into the specifications to see what they would do about patching these cuts, and it's really just, you know, digging down an inch or two to put 2 inches of asphalt or bituminous material, so it's a patch. And you know what happens with water and how they get in between those cracks of the new and the old asphalt. And so this road is going to have to be planned to be redone in another year or two through a warrant article to the voters. And they're going to say, why wasn't that part of the water project?
Mm-hmm.
Like it was in Oak Ridge.
Yeah.
So, now I understand, but again,
you know, Kathy and I didn't have very much insight into the either the design phase or much of the project at all.
That's why I'm asking her to resign, is because why she executed the contract when she had minimal input into it. I mean, to go and do something, number one, without having knowledge of what she's signing is a problem. And number two, without the attorney reviewing it, that's a major issue. That's why she should resign immediately. There is no ands, ifs, and buts. She's made a cluster out of this for the Village District.
Well, I think we relied on Adam to be. It was. Adam was our spokesperson in this.
Jay, he's gone now. You can't blame him.
All right. Anything else, Mike? Because we've got to move on.
I'm getting off. I've had my. Kathy, you should resign.
I'd like to make
thank
a comment.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Thank you.
Jay, I'd like to make a comment.
Who's that, please?
It's Ralph.
Well, go ahead, Ralph.
I think what Mike is talking to is a very superficial review of the contract, maybe non-existent review of the contract, and the net result is we have mass confusion, even about bills being paid and how we pay the bills and all these other things. There is no discussion out there about performance of the contract and line items. Wouldn't that be interesting for people to understand it? So it's really an indictment on the current commissioners. Unfortunately, Adam isn't part of this, but I think he's largely responsible. But it never should have happened this way. It never should have worked this way. It's ridiculous in my mind. The other problem is, you've got a certain number of days to pay a bill. What if the performance is exaggerated? What's the dispute process?
Yeah, and there is
actually. Does anybody know?
I happened to actually read that this morning. Thank you. So there is a dispute process. There's a there can be a challenge. And then, so that gets into some really interesting parts of the contract as well. So let's say, for example, with regards to performance, the question might arise, did you put down the proper depth of sand underneath the pipe and the proper depth on top? There's a challenge, and there's maybe a witness that was on site, whether it be a resident or someone else, that says it wasn't done right here in this area. So, what happens is you would actually dig a test pit. The engineer can order a test pit to be dug to verify the sand amount around that pipe. And if the sand is not where it's supposed to be or to the depth it's supposed to be, then the contractor is on the hook. Now, then the question would become, well, how long of a trench does this imperfection exist? Now, the other thing is if you have the contractor dig that test pit and you do find there's sufficient sand where it needs to be, then the owner is on the hook for paying for that test pit. So there is clarity to that process, Ralph. I just read that this morning.
What about if there is an overstatement of completeness? In other words, they say it's 100% complete and it's only 50% complete.
Right. And so, again, there's a challenge. There can be a challenge to that. And the way the process works right now is the contractor has given us a list of those 11 sections of the contract that the contractor is working on individually, and he gives a percentage of completion. And the engineer then goes and verifies that. So it's our water system engineer, which is Chris Albert and Jones and Beach, who will verify that level of completion. So Chris obviously is an not an employee, but a contractor to the Village District. And whether it be Jones and Beach or Fluid Engineering, I guess we have to have a certain level of trust in their abilities.
Well, how about an independent review by the commissioners in terms of completeness? We usually substantiate bills that are paid, and we're now going to rely on the engineer without an independent review.
So,
well, I think, Jay, I applaud you for looking at those 11 or 12 line items, and you asked some pretty significant questions of Chris because you were concerned or were unsure of the level of completeness. And so you did go up there and basically, you know, line by line, check to see that percentage of the project was complete. So there was commissioner oversight.
Yeah, so thank you, Kathy. So I sent out an email last night, Ralph. I'm sorry it's not readily available to you now, but some of the questions I had, for example, there was a 4-inch gate valve that was placed down on Stallings Road, which is the end line for the Reinhardt Pressure Zone. So I did not see that get installed into the ground, but I can verify it using the metal detector that the Village District has, and Chris can give me that location. But what Chris explained to me this morning was that that valve, even though it's listed as being complete, there was missing a 90-degree elbow. So I did get answers back from Chris with regards to, I think I've got about five questions here on each of the different sections as to the level of completeness. And so he's verified these for me. And the next thing I'm going to be doing is getting the formula for how they calculate what is called cubic yardage of rock. Because, as you know, we've taken some pretty large rocks out of the ground, sometimes half the size of a Volkswagen, sometimes the size of a Volkswagen. Well, how many cubic yards is it? How do they measure that? And there's actually a formula used to determine that. So I'm actually going to go and try to validate that myself, just to validate this.
Hi, this is Dinah. I have some problems as well with the financial part of it being totally done by the engineer. I have never seen these documents before, and I pointed out two errors that are in here. And his thing was, oh, yeah, well, you know, we'll do that. You know, I don't feel comfortable with that. I don't care about blasting and valves and stuff. However, the real money part of it, again, we are totally depending on the engineer for the accuracy and the amounts to be dispersed, and I think that should also be reviewed by us a little more carefully. Thank you.
Yeah. And Dinah, you and I had that same conversation the other day that we will kind of start keeping track of the expenses, who's paying for it, how it got paid, was it from the loan, was it from the capital reserve fund, is it reimbursable, when was it sent to the state to get reimbursed, and when did we receive reimbursement? So, you know, I think you and I can certainly do a good job at keeping track of where we are with this project and kind of confirm what it is that Chris has got on his distribution forms.
I suppose that we'll have to do. Again, we don't have the backup for any of this data, which I don't really want to pore over, but I think somebody should.
I think we kind of do. I'm going to put that document on the website so that, you know, Ralph and Mike can review it.
Yeah, that'd be very helpful. And I pointed out to Chris a problem with this disbursement amount. It's not right. So our spreadsheet is going to have to mirror what we have actually done, and we'll have to make sure that Chris is following up on the errors he made in this document.
Well, the only error was really that he didn't include the retainage on the DN tank. It was on the itemized, but it wasn't on the total.
Right, but he's just going to use his figures to do this. So
we owe
him other accounts, and it's just going to be tricky. And I have no reason not to trust Chris Albert, but I also think, along with the other discussions we've been having, mm-hmm. the village yep. really needs to be careful and verify.
Yep, I agree.
Trust but verify. All right. Anything else? Okay, I have just one other thing I want to bring up under administration, and that is the empty seat vacated by Adam. Kathy, do you want to go on to non-public after this meeting to discuss potential replacements?
No, actually, one thing that the prior board did incorrectly was they did go into non-public to discuss potential commissioners, and I don't think you're allowed to do that.
Okay, I didn't know. I thought the last time last week's meeting, we talked that it had to be non-public if we talked about either potential.
I believe I want to verify that before we go into non-public, because I am pretty sure that we realized 2.5 years ago that was not a discussion that should happen in non-public.
Okay. All right. As far as time frame, when do you want to do that? We'd have to consult with our attorney?
To do what? To see if that was applicable?
Yeah.
I can send you the paragraph from NHMA, actually.
Okay. All right. Good.
I'll do that, because I think that's something that, whether they did it intentionally or not, I don't know, but we realize that that is something that should be discussed in public, not in non-public.
Okay.
It's not an employee situation.
Right.
Okay, so I think we need to move on and at least get the manifest approved so we can get our bills paid.
Yeah.
And I think Kelly's at world set.
Yeah, anything else for me so I can go?
Wear a rain today.
Wear a
rain.
I always wear a
rain.
See ya.
All right.
On that note.
All right. So I posted on the website that the kayak portal is opening on June 15th, which corresponds with the newsletter.
Okay.
And I sent a text to Andrew to change it on the portal as well.
All right, great. Thank you, Kathy.
All right.
So we're going to move on, unless anybody else has anything more to say on administration. There's quite a bit said. We're already at 2 hours, 20 minutes. Okay, hearing none, we're going to move right on to accounts payable. We have a manifest for $409.33.
We're going to have the 9
and 33.
Yeah.
My agenda has a typo. I'm sorry. My bad. Bad thumbs. Okay. And Donna, you want to read off the checks?
Kathy, second it?
Kathy, you want to second that motion? Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right, the first check was to Auburn Service Center for the deposit on the outfitting of the new truck, for deposit of 50%. So it's for $22,352.50. The next one was for Coleman Rental for $153.50. The next one was to Donahue and Tucker for $1,845.42. The next one was to Easton Propane Oil for $506.51.
So was that for propane or was
that? That was for diesel.
Diesel.
Yeah.
Mary Gas. Okay.
Yeah. The next one is our monthly Eversource bill for $2,382.98.
Is that all water system stuff?
That's all the whole kit and caboodle.
Oh, it is.
Street lighting, building lighting, and the water system. Yep.
The next one is to the retirement system for $2,051.64. The next one is to Sunel Auto Parts for $49.64. And Verizon Wireless for $67.14. And that's it.
Okay.
Anybody have any questions with regards to those payments? Okay, hearing none. So we have a motion on the floor. It's been seconded, and all in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Okay. So, Kathy, when you get a chance, if you can just come in and sign those checks, and I'll initial
them. Yeah, I'll be down this afternoon. I'll be down this afternoon, yep.
Thank you.
All right. We have a couple of signature items.
Yep. We have from the Bank of New Hampshire, we have the two new retainage accounts that Dinah has brought forth to us. Thank you, Dinah.
Good.
Dinah has signed it. I have signed it. And, Kathy, this is another signature item for you.
Okay, thank
so
you.
I'll make a move. I'll make a motion that we
have everything.
We have the motion already made, the signing out of session because of the COVID.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay.
We have another signature item, and that is the audit.
Oh, is it? Okay.
And I didn't know we had to sign this.
The other one. There's two pages.
That one has to be signed. But this is the audit itself.
That's the draft of the audit.
Yeah, and this is what we signed. Okay. So there's a document here from the auditor. It's a full-pager, and it requires the three commissioners' signatures. We only have two at the moment, so I think that will fly, majority. So I'm going to make a motion that we go ahead and sign the documentation for the final audit.
Okay, I'll second that.
It's the final draft.
The final draft.
Yeah.
And
is it still a draft, or is it the final, or is it a draft?
Well, it's got draft printed across it, and once we sign the document, she's going to take that watermark away.
Okay.
So it becomes the final.
Okay. All right.
I'm just signing it for those people who are wondering what I'm doing. Okay. So there's another item for you. There's three items down here for you to sign, Kathy.
Okay.
Thank you. Going to jump down quickly. We have those are the signature items. We have no committee report. We'll jump right down to Section 8, which is the water system. So we have the water hookup request for number 9, Reinhardt, and number 7, Biasca. Kathy, you brought that up earlier. Mm-hmm. And I think
nine Reinhardt, I believe those folks, they did purchase a lot. They're beyond the end of our water main, and they are in conversations with Dawson's as to the cost, because they would rather hook up to the water system than trying to install a well.
Okay.
And then 7 Biasca, yes, it was. 7 Biasca, he applied last year, was denied, and wants to reapply. And I think how do you want to proceed with the question as to whether or not there's a water main in front of his property?
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, I thought at last week's meeting, Ian definitely said that it had to be sent to the engineer.
Well, yeah, but he said that there is a dead end to that line. It does seem to end, well, he thinks it ends, at least on the sketch that he saw, at that property. So,
right. But Donna, what the engine, so Jay, so I think, Donna,
yeah.
what Fluid Engineering would do is they would do a hypothetical. If that property was hooked up to the water system, what it would do to the pressure. So I think up there, we know the pressure's not a problem. The problem now is we don't know exactly where the water main is, and the engineer doesn't know that either. Right. So now we're going by whatever maps we might have in the district that indicate the possibility of there actually being a water line going in front of that piece of property. So the pressure test won't need to be done because it's right there at the pressure zone. Is that correct?
So the pressure is going to be good, and I guess the question is, if it happens to be 25 feet outside of their property line, do we charge them for that? If you read the application for the water hookup, if in fact we hit ledge, for example, they're responsible for paying for that. And I'm wondering, would they be willing to pay for, let's say, 25 or 35 feet if the end of the water line is just short of their property line? Because we just don't know.
I know. Well, isn't typically the property owner responsible for any and all costs going from the dead end to their property?
Yes.
I'm not saying that we should do that, but isn't that what the ordinance indicates?
Right, exactly.
It does. You're agreeing with that, yes.
If you want to get a water line to your property and it does not end at your property, then you'll have to bring it into the end of your property. The question becomes, go ahead.
So is there water at 5B after? That would be the lot before him, correct?
That is correct, and there is.
Okay. So the letter should say, you know, that that the district is unclear, unsure, however you want to word it, that the water main extends beyond 5B Aska, and that the cost would be borne, you know, the property owner would have to bear the cost of extending that water line if it does not exist.
Yeah. I'm just looking at the map right now.
And say, some indication that it was planned to be installed. Whether it actually was, we have no knowledge of or confirmation that water line has actually been installed in that location.
Right. I'm looking at the water map on the wall here, and the house directly across the street on that lot directly across the street has water. So
okay.
I'm assuming that water line is, if it's not at the boundary line, it's just maybe a few feet away.
Okay. But is it in the middle of the road? Is it on the left side of the road? On the right side of the road?
Yeah, well, you'll never know.
We might find out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So the water pressure isn't an issue.
Yeah, if they want to go ahead and apply again, I'd give them the green light. They go ahead and apply, and then we'll have to obviously do test pits up there to find out where the water line is. Irregardless, even if we know it's in front of the lot, you still have to do test pits because there's no indication of the side of the
road. Donna, I just happen to know this individual, so he called me. He wanted to know if he could take the application that he already filled out and just send you another check, or does he need to fill out a whole new application?
Is this 7 Biasca that we're talking about now?
Yep. That's Dean Lambert.
Okay.
Yeah, Dean Lambert. Yes, Dean Lambert.
Okay.
Let me see if I have it.
We're looking to see if we still have it in the folder.
Okay. It's probably I don't know the lot map and lot number, and of course we're like 80% done of re-identifying all our property folders.
While Donna's looking for that,
we can do that this afternoon.
Yeah, and okay, just the question I had, which still is outstanding, is that of water shutoffs and liens on outstanding fee water users that have not paid their fees, whether it be for 2 months or 2 years or 20 years.
We looked at the list briefly, and the one lot that has the highest water fees due, we keep billing them, is now actually owned by the town of Madison.
So
oh, it is.
I don't. Yep. So I don't think A, we can go back and collect past due fees because there was never a lien. So therefore, when the property transferred to the town, we have no claim on that property. I believe that's true. And should we be billing Madison for that piece of property going forward once they took possession?
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think we can bill another municipality. Like, Madison doesn't bill us for anything that we ask of them.
Right.
Here's my question. So there are, as you just mentioned, there are some homes that have back arrears in water fees of maybe $3,000. There's some that are $2,500. So I guess, do we want to set a limit that if you're in arrears more than $1,000, we start
right.
the process of applying the lien?
Because what happens in small claims court, if we put a lien on a property for $500 and the next year they don't pay, the lien is still only for $500. It's not going to be for $1,000. It's only for the amount that you request of the court. So it should be after the second. If the second water payment is over 30 days or over 60 days old.
Yeah.
Then we should. I don't think that doesn't need to be an ordinance or anything. But that's when we should make sure that we get our name we should have it recorded that monies are owed to us, because if the house on Oak Ridge gets sold, we have no claim to that property any longer.
Right, exactly.
And that's what happened
with
the one
that here is that houses will transact, whether it be by sale
yep.
or by the town collecting the property because of lack of tax payment. And we
yeah, or it goes, it's an estate. It's an estate, and it gets transferred to another relative. Then you know we're basically unable to collect that money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So
okay. Now, what's the limit in small claims court?
Oh, it could be for I think $100. I'm not sure how low.
No, not the cost. No, the amount that you it doesn't have to go. What's the maximum amount that you can sue the property owner for in small claims court? It used to be like up to $2,500. I just didn't know what the, because at some point you can't take somebody's small claims court for $80,000. That has to go to a regular trial or regular court.
Right. Right. And,
the small claims court does have a maximum.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. I know it's on the form itself, but of course those numbers change every few years, so I don't know what it is currently.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So I don't know if there may be only three or four of them that are over $1,000, not including
yeah.
the one that's owned by the town of Madison.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, we'll look into
that. Is that something we want, Chris Bolt? I mean, I don't know. Do we need an attorney of that caliber to be filing? Or actually, we could probably do it ourselves, right? We don't need an attorney to do that.
Well, actually, from what I understand, if a lien is going to be filed against the property owner, the village district can't do it, but the town of Madison will do it for us.
Really?
Yeah, actually, all liens that have been done before through the water system have been done through using the town of Madison, because they have the right to do so. I guess it's not within a jurisdiction or something.
Oh, that's interesting. Because all right, well then maybe you know then. So do you want me to get in touch with Linda Shackford to find out what the process is?
Yeah, and if she knows what the limits are, because I know they probably put out. They do. They actually put out tax liens against property, so they may know
right.
the process already, because they do it, I think, on an annual
basis.
Full
claim process with Linda. Okay. Okay. All right. Okay.
All right.
All right. Yep.
Okay, moving on. We talked about the water usage. I know we had a correspondence from Larry Leonard on water usage, and he said it seemed to be a bit erratic, and it may be because of the number of people that have been coming up unexpected because of the virus.
Okay.
Moving on down to commissioners' report.
Just as we're still on the water, the second bills went out for payments on Tuesday.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Donna has sent out the second late payment bill.
With a late fee date of July 1st.
Right.
And I put on the bill due to COVID.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. That's good. Okay, so we talked about the management discussion and analysis. That's all signed. Just waiting for Kathy's signature, and that can be all done. I sent out some guidance from the state. It's actually stay-at-home 2.0, governor's guidelines for beach use and outhouses. There's the universal guidelines, and then there was one for parks. Inland parks is what it was called. So I referred to that.
Yeah, I read both of those.
Yeah, okay. So when we get some determination on the 15th from the governor and then the 16th from the town of Madison as to what they're doing, we'll be better prepared on the, I believe, the 18th to make our decision.
So now,
okay,
Jay, I read the part with where it's talked, not the beach one, but the general one, and it's saying that the employer, meaning us, must verify that the employees coming into work have had their temperature taken and it's below 100. Now, are we exempt from that in any way or form? They're saying it must be recorded. It said it must be recorded. You know, we have to have a spreadsheet, and it does say that if we can substantiate that when they tell us that they took their temperature at home and we believe them, then that would be acceptable.
Yeah, we could always buy a I'm not going to say it.
Yeah.
See, Donna's got me going.
Yeah.
Okay. And,
I'm just saying, should we just have a spreadsheet and every morning, you know, whether it's Donna or if the office is closed, Jay, call them and say, was your temperature below 100 this morning? Yes, yes. And just, you know, check off that we did ask that question. Or do you think it's more of a, because it says must. It didn't say recommended. It was kind of emphatic on that particular point.
Right.
So just reread that and see. I just don't want anything to come back at us if we don't do what's required.
Yeah, because it, you know, it even got down to you could make reservations for use of the picnic tables and all that stuff.
Right.
An online system.
Right, or you could remove the picnic table. So, which is what we did. We, you know, chained them together so they're unable to be used.
Right. So we got requests from the EPOA about using the beaches during July and August, and I guess my best answer to them would be, yeah, you can go ahead and do so, but you'd have to comply with the universal guidelines for having open food serving on the beaches, which would mean that their servers would have to wear face masks, gloves that would have to be changed every time they touch someone else's plate, signage everywhere, the 6-foot distance marks in the sand. I read it and I said, oh my gosh, it'd be easier to cook a souffle than to set up for that.
So Jay, all right. So Jay, why don't we, could you, on a PDF, can you cut that paragraph out or do a screenshot and send it to them?
Yep. Okay.
Instead of us trying to interpret the regulations and then convey it from us to the office to them, just send them that saying, it seems like it would be highly unlikely that we would be able to comply with these regulations.
Right.
And if things change on the 15th, then you know, would be all set. But as of right now, this is what we'd have to do in order to have a cookout on the beach.
Yep. And as far as another request that we got for usage, and that is of the lodge for the organization known as B3EPA, and that is the Big Three Key Forage Association. They want to have a presentation done by someone from the DES Lakesmart. And they want to be able to use our lodge. Now, going back into the regulations, universal guidelines, you can now have indoor gathering, but the maximum capacity of the building needs to be at 50%. So knowing that the lodge has a capacity listed by the fire department of 75 maximum. That
oh, really? That's a lot of people. What? 75 people? That's high.
So Donna just brought up the great point. There is the maximum capacity number, but Donna's correct in that it really is the distance allowed in the building. So,
I know, like, for example, like for classrooms, they're an average size. They were only allowed to have 9 students in a classroom.
Right, right.
So the lodge is maybe 2 classroom sizes.
Yeah.
So probably like 18 people, 20 tops.
Yeah, so what I was going to do, Kathy and Donna, was to go up to the lodge and then physically measure, you know, basically take a 6-foot hula hoop and space it out, see how many chairs you could put in the center of that ring. And that would be the maximum capacity because...
So if you're looking... Jay, don't even go through all that trouble. I think that we should wait till the number of people gathering at a public place has been lifted. Because that would be, I think that would be a very well attended seminar, and I think it's valuable. I think it would be great to be listed as one of their Lake Smart qualifiers. So, and it's a matter of scheduling the speaker. So we can schedule him in October.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I would.
So we'll wait on that one.
Yeah, I don't think it makes sense to try and cram that into this summer because you know in order to get approved by Lake Smart, you have to pass a bunch of these tests. So there's no time sensitivity to it.
Right.
I think we should wait. I think we should say we think it's a great idea. The commissioners are excited about the opportunity, but we would like to make sure that the maximum number of people can attend. So until the sanctions of the COVID restrictions are lifted, we would prefer that it be done at that time or however you want to word it.
All right. Okay. I'll send
I'll do that with Donna. Jay, I'll do that with Donna in the email, okay?
Okay, great. Thank you.
So Donna, you and I can put that email together today, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Okay, you got enough to do.
Yeah, I have a car under correspondence. We have a resident asking about truck traffic that is prior to the 7 a.m. And so Chris Albert actually answered a question last week in regards to the time frame of operation during this Rhinoc project, and it actually was 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. So if there were trucks. Yeah, mobilizing to the site to be there at 7 a.m. There's no law against them driving in the Village District at any hour, so there's nothing we can do about that.
Jay, this was not Dawson's trucks.
No.
He said it was Coleman's trucks, and it was, what was the other one, Donna? Matthias? What was the?
Heath,
okay. So it was not our construction project trucks.
Yeah, so that's just general traffic going through the district.
Yep.
Oh.
So I can drive through the district at 5 a.m., so I guess the trucks can too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Then there was that same resident was asking about who's mowing the grass at the flagpole. And I know it's normally been the EPOA has hired somebody. Do we know if the EPOA has hired anybody this year to mow grass? Is Dinah still on the call?
No.
Okay, Dinah's left the call.
No.
But maybe we can reach out to John as well. I'm writing him a letter anyhow for the use of the beaches. Do you want me to include that?
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, Jay, can we spend up to $200 to buy our DPW a lawnmower?
Well, that would be if we want to have the DPW mowing grass.
Well, the conversations with both Kelly and Jeff last year was they wouldn't mind doing it. They hate when it looks like this, and I agree with them. I don't think it would be a bad thing.
Yeah, I thought
maybe we could reach out to the EPOA first, Kathy, and find out what their plans are, and then decide if we should take that on.
Yeah, because I thought the entrance lot was cut this year already. But I
was
didn't
it?
See the flag. Yeah, it looked like it was cut to me. And then I noticed yesterday that the grass at the flagpole was pretty high.
That's pretty bad.
If there is somebody doing it, then let's have that person identify. But if there's not, hey, I'll bring my lawnmower here. I got more than one.
Well, we tried this last year, and I guess if the DPW had it, it would be easy to get it to. I mean, I don't mind mowing either, but it just seems to be an overly convoluted problem.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, let's ask the EPOA, and if they give a thumbs down, okay, then we'll certainly drag one up.
Yeah, and I think this Judy Taylor was on the phone, and we did tell her that it had been the responsibility of the EPOA and that we would reach out to them. So we did tell her that we would do that.
Okay. All right, and let's see what else we have.
You've got here, in my name in capital letters, water level for loons. Was there a question about that?
Yeah, so you had sent the correspondence about the water level for loons. And so I wanted to say that, yeah, after the thunderstorms of last weekend,
okay,
the water level really didn't rise too much.
Okay.
There is an extra board that was put back in, but not the full board capacity, but there's a good level of water at the nest, but we don't want to go any higher than where it is now. And yeah. I was told by Paula Doyle that we should expect anywhere from a week to a week and a half for those eggs to hatch. So once those eggs hatch and those birds get into the water, I guess we can just go ahead and put all the boards back in to accommodate the other requests for raising the water levels on the big pond.
Because I looked at, after I sent that email, I was just concerned about, you know, we had two pretty severe downpours. And I looked on the LPC cam, and it looked like, and again, I don't know how far down the eggs are, but it looked like there was plenty of freeboard, if you will, between the nest and the water.
Yep.
Okay. All right. I didn't know if somebody was questioning the comment on the newsletter. That's all.
All right.
But it was my question to you. Okay.
And
all right.
Now the other thing I wanted to cover was the 91A request, because that's a hot topic. And I know that we had a request to Mark, but I think we sent him pretty much everything.
Yeah, we sent what we had that we could, and the last thing is looking for is the audit.
The audit.
Okay. Yep. That'll be done.
So Jay, I meant to bring this up when Chris was on the phone, and I forgot. So back on the original bid canvas that showed the expected cost by the engineer and the three bids, one of the line items there was $39,000 for engineering. Now, was there a separate contract for that, or was that, are we spending down that $31,000 already, meaning the design of the tank? We looked at that extra, there was an extra $10,000 and then an extra $3,000, not extra, but additional.
Yeah, so there were two contracts from Chris or Jones and Beek, and one was, I believe, for $21,000 and the other was for $10,000. 21,
yeah.
I believe, had to do with the engineering work to be done by Jones.
But my question, we found a bunch of the contracts. So were those the contracts that would add up to that $39,000? So is that from the beginning, from day one, that $39,000? And we've already spent down most of that.
Yeah, if you remember at the bid opening meeting, Chris had said that he had about $14,000 left of that $39,000 in which he spent.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. I vaguely remember that, but I hadn't written that down. So the $39,000 was the $21,700 for the designing of the project, and there was $10,000 for another phase, and there was $3,000 for doing the LIDAR mapping portion of it.
Yes, exactly. The LIDAR was another additive, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. Okay. So we should be able to find the contracts that add up to the $39,000, and then we know what we've already spent, so we could figure out what the balance is on that $39,000. Okay. I didn't know if there was another $39,000 added to the whole project outside of those, or if those contracts were what we were working off of and that we've already spent down most of that $39,000, which sounds like that's what we did. Okay.
Yes. Yep. Okay.
Does that make sense, Donna? Yeah.
Yeah. We did.
Only because, only, Only because Mark asked about that, so I wanted to make sure we sent him the right information.
Yep. Okay.
Okay.
And,
right.
We also had a request from Adam. He had a 91A request for the QuickBooks information. Is that right?
Yeah.
And who's gonna? Are you gonna take care of that, Donna?
Kathy was working with it.
Okay.
Yeah. We reached out to Chris Bolt, but we also talked to Catherine about it. And one of the problems is that, yes, you could send him the whole backup, but because we do payroll now, that there's payroll information in there, including people's Social Security numbers and things like that. So we'll have to figure out a workaround for that.
Okay, gotcha.
I don't know if we can send him the whole backup QuickBooks file. I don't think we can back it up less the payroll piece of it.
No, because Catherine said it's embedded in the program itself, so
exactly.
She was concerned with.
Okay. All right.
And
okay.
David Maudsley was another requester.
Yeah, we sent him with I didn't get a response back.
Okay.
Like I did explain
something
that
had
all this stuff put aside.
Okay.
And basically, Jay, we said, look, the only because the office is open, the only practical way is that we make copies of everything he wants, and they're 25 cents a copy. And so we didn't deny him access, but that's the only feasible way for him to get those documents until the office opens.
No, I agree.
Okay. All right. Just want you to know that was the response.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So that basically covers most of our correspondence, or all of it that we have so far, I believe. Is there anything that I missed, Kathy?
Just kind of scanning back up here. So we know 10 Barden. We know what's going on. Yeah. And I'd like to make a note on that three-ring binder for the water curb stop valves of the ones that Ian owes us. Because Larry Leonard made a good point that we have been a little bit lax in making sure that that binder gets updated. So even though we're going to get more accurate GPS coordinates, we still need the triangulation and we need the photographs. So I think we still need to keep that binder up to date.
Yeah, let me add another household to that list. That's number 5, Bergdorf.
Okay.
There was a water line that was brought to that house 2 years ago, if you remember, Habitat for Humanity.
Okay.
Yeah, so I believe that.
You mean, Jay, that wasn't under our watch and the prior board didn't get the information?
They did not get the information.
Okay.
Nor did they put it into the three-ring binder.
Okay, I just want to make that clear.
Yeah.
But thank you for that.
No, I looked for it and it's not there, so...
Okay. All right. So, Jay,
yeah.
Do you want me to resign as commissioner?
No.
Okay. All right.
Yeah,
I just wanted to know what you thought. If you felt that it would be better for the district if I resigned.
Not until I do first.
Okay. All right.
Okay,
Donna,
so,
you want me to resign?
Well, me?
Okay. All right.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
So that brings me to my next question. Do we want to talk about filling the third seat?
I reached out to Mike Dolan, and he wasn't interested. I thought maybe because he did express an interest last year that he might, but he said no. He was not interested.
Okay. And I've had people talk to me. I know Paula Doyle said she's interested in. We also have Ralph Lutchen. That's the only two that I know of. Have we gotten any response to the newsletter where if anybody was interested that they should call the office? Any calls?
No calls have come since that was mentioned.
Okay.
Well, I would like to get the Little Loop issue resolved prior to bringing on a third commissioner. So hopefully that can get done within the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay.
Okay. So you want to do that first before bringing in the third commissioner?
Yes.
All right. We have what a response for 10. I shouldn't say anything.
No, we should go to non-public if you want to go talk about that.
Yeah, no, there's nothing really. Your letter.
Yes, if we want to go into non-public and discuss that.
Yeah, I was going to say we need to go to non-public for that. Okay.
Yes.
All right, I'll make the motion that we go to non-public session to discuss a letter of negotiation under, let me find the proper RSA. Are you guys?
Oh, excuse me, Jay, this is Paula. Can I make a public comment before you guys go to non-public?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, you're absolutely right. Go ahead, Paula.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to the conversation you guys were having about Kathy resigning, because I did want to say I couldn't disagree more with Mike Smith. I don't think there's any need or any reason or cause for Kathy to resign. I think Kathy's done a great job as commissioner. Overall, I think, you know, she works really hard. It's really clear and, has gotten all those electrical projects plus more done, I'm sure I wouldn't even mention. I'm never a fan of the way that Adam conducted himself as commissioner in terms of the way he did things, not necessarily what he did, the work itself, but the way things were done. There's been a lot of divisiveness in this district for many years now. I applaud Kathy in terms of her style and her tone, and she's never participated in that. And I haven't always agreed with some of the votes she's taken and the decisions, but that's about content, not about style. And I hope that Kathy stays and serves out her entire term because I don't think we need more upheaval and change, and I think we need to get on with things and get some stuff done. And
no, thank you, I didn't want to be another source of divisiveness.
Yeah, it's got to end. got to get on with things. And nobody expects that perfect. People just expect when we elect officials, we just expect you to do your best, and you're going to learn, and you're going to make mistakes. Anybody is, and you probably have things you say, I've done that differently, or I wish, whatever, or here's why I did it. But you know, this thing about the contract is just get on with it. The project is moving along. It's getting done. I'm sure it'll get done. It'll all work out. And let's just move on, you know. So I that's just my comment on that. I hope I can be happy for the
No, I appreciate that, Paula. And, you know, hindsight is 20/20, as they always say. It's very easy to be critical of woulda, coulda, shoulda. So I certainly appreciate that.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Sorry. Thank you, Paul. I apologize. I forgot to go back and open up the public comments. So thank you for reminding me, Paul. Anybody else on the call?
Nobody else is there.
Oh, they have all left?
Yep.
Okay.
Elvis has left the building.
All right. Well, I forgot to mention thank you, everybody, for showing up. But at this point, I think we're going to end the call so that Kathy and I can go into non-public session. So I'll make the motion that we go to non-public session to discuss the letter of negotiation under RSA 91A:3, Section 2E, which is the consideration on negotiation of pending claims or litigation which has been threatened in writing or filed against the board or any subdivision thereof or against any member thereof because of his or her membership therein, until the claim or litigation has been fully adjudicated or otherwise settled. I believe that's the one.
Okay. And that was under the advice of legal counsel to go into a non-public under those RSAs. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. All right, do I have a second to that motion?
Second.
Okay. All in favor for roll call, say yay. Yay.
Yes.
Okay.
Jay, are you on your cell phone? Are you dialed into the conference call?
No, we've been on the cell phone for about an hour now because we only have a 2-hour limit on the Polycon.
So but I'm still on the Polycon though.
Oh,
I'm still on the. Do you want me to call you on your meeting?
Yeah. Can you call into my or the office? You can just call into the office.
Okay, I'll call the office. Actually, give me about 2 seconds so I can take a outhouse break. Okay.
Okay. Don't remember to sanitize first. Wash your hands.
Okay. Don't worry. Don't you worry. All right. I'll call right back. Bye.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.